All right, welcome to the Sports Ethos Los Angeles Chargers podcast. We thought we were done until the new year. We are not. We're back a few days later since I waited to upload after the Christmas festivities. With Shane and Brandon, how are you guys doing today?
Excellent. Yourself?
Yeah, not bad. Not bad.
Yeah, pretty good. So you ask, why are we putting this at the front of the podcast that we did on Sunday? Russell Wilson got cut, so we got to talk about this before I upload it because we're not recording until the new year. Shane, are you shocked? Are you surprised? What's your instant reaction to Russell Wilson getting the boot from Denver?
You know, I'm not shocked that this ended up happening. I'm more shocked the way it went down. You know, and the reason I say that is because... We've been talking about it that it just seemed like Russ and Sean Payton weren't really the best match. And, you know, there were times where they were yelling at each other on the side. Well, really more Payton was yelling at Russ on the sidelines, but then it just didn't look good, to put it mildly. And so, you know, I was thinking, yeah, maybe, you know, after next year or something, they'll think about getting rid of it. But no, they're not even sticking out to the end of the season. Which is, it's just kind of crazy how, you know, I was looking at him as the season was going on thinking, yeah, you know, he's doing pretty well this year, which, I mean, I genuinely thought he was pretty good, all things considered. And, you know, I guess they have other plans. You know, they say that it's entirely a financial thing with his whole weird injury clause. That's BS. It's not just a financial thing. I'm sorry, but pay attention to how they're, you know, how this whole thing has unfolded. And just sort of the weird aura he has around him in the locker room, because it is weird, objectively. Yeah. Now I'm just thinking, you know, what does this look like for both sides? You know, what's next for Russ? What's next for the Broncos? And I'm sure we'll talk about that shortly here, but. Anyways,
really quick contract details here. $124 million fully guaranteed at signing. And then the dead cap hit that they're going to pay on March 1st is $85 million. If they waited until 2025, it would have been 49.6. And they had a potential out in 2026, but they weren't going to wait that long, apparently. They had $85 million in dead cap room. I don't know too much about, like, all these injury clauses. But Brandon, your thoughts on Russell getting cut. What was your instant reaction?
When I saw that he was getting benched, I'm like, well, I mean, their season is over. Chad Ryland just ended your season.
Pretty much. They're still in playoff contention randomly at this point, but it's basically done. But yes, continue. Yeah.
So, you know, basically, you know, they right there and then there, the season was over. But if this had been brewing for months, especially with how much they have invested in him and also how well he's played, given, you know, like you said, given the circumstances, it's still a shock. You know, you look at, like, what's your future plans now? I mean, you know, there's already been, you know, rumors of you trying to drop guys at the trade deadline earlier this season. You know, guys like Jerry Jeudy were floating around, even Pat Surtain. And now you cut your quarterback who's got a massive deal. You've invested so much into him. You brought him here. You know, last year was kind of a throwaway, but this year you're being brought in Sean Payton to fix him. And that hasn't worked, and him and Sean Payton are butting heads. It's it's as the people would say in today's world, it's a disaster class by that organization. I look at it as kind of the same thing, you know, Shane was saying, where the hell do they go from here? I don't know where they go from here. I mean, your backup right now is Jarrett Stidham, so you're going to be in the market for a quarterback. I don't know where he would go after that. I don't know where he's going to go after this, because I don't know how I mean, listen, he has a good season statistically, but he's on the back end of his career. What are you going to pay? And Russell doesn't want to be a backup. So, and he's not going to, I don't think he's going to take a backup role.
He is a backup at this point.
Yeah, he is. But in his mind, he definitely thinks he's not.
I don't think he is.
No, I think he is. I think he 100% is a backup.
You think there are 32 quarterbacks in the NFL better than him?
Yes, he was the 50th ranked quarterback last season.
Yeah, that was last season. This year, he's like top 10.
Yeah, I don't know. Brandon, yeah, go ahead.
But you got to take into account how his Seahawks tenure ended. It wasn't great. How his Broncos tenure started wasn't great. I mean, this is the only good year he's had. It's like, in terms of rebounding, this is the best year he's had in what, 3 years, 4 years? So it's not more. So, I mean, I'm not gonna sit here and say that, like, you know, it's Russell Wilson. He's a big name. He's a brand name. He's a Super Bowl champion. You know, all these things that come with it. I mean, but when you look at it at this point in his career, why would you want? I think he has starter potential still, but why would you want him to start for your team given his age, given the fact that we know he's on the decline? Who in their right mind would want to take him? And on top of that, it's also to take a lot of money that comes with that too. Because Russell Wilson's not cheap. So,
well, I mean, I'll be honest. I would think that if someone offers him a starting role, it's going to be for significantly less money. Like, no one's going to, he's going to go through waivers. No one's going to take him, obviously. And then you're looking maybe 2 years at 20 million, maybe? That's what I'm projecting. Like, I don't know.
No,
like,
I think that's probably what's most likely going to happen, because, you know, you'd be crazy to give him anything crazy. But is he going to take it knowing him? I mean, like, I don't know him personally, but given what we've seen the past few years, is he really going to take something like that? I don't know.
Hold on.
So that's why, like, I don't want to say his career is over, but given all the things that we've seen in the past couple seasons, past few seasons, and what's transpired here, like, would this be the end for Russell Wilson? Is this how his career ends? Just like this? You know, it's a really murky, very gray area situation. It's like no one knows what's going to go on here, because nobody expected this. But I guess once that season's over, and once they saw that, you know, once the front office saw that, hey, you know, that he's not, I mean, he had a good season this year, but he's not getting us to the playoffs, and he's not, you know, we brought him in to push this thing along, and it's not going anywhere. You know, it's like, where do you go? Like, for Russell Wilson at this point, I think the only place to go is down or out. And, you know, he's got a massive ego. So, you know, I don't think down's an option. So if it's not, the only option is out. It's confusing. I mean, like, it sucks because there's so much money tied up into him. But as the more I'm thinking about it, I said in the chat that Deshaun Watson's contract is the worst in NFL history. This, given how this is transpiring, like, if this isn't right next to it. Yeah. Like, if this isn't right next to it, I mean, then I don't know what is, because this is terrible. This whole situation is terrible.
I want to talk about a couple of things with this. I have no sourcing on this, but this is how I feel about this whole thing. Number one, just from a widescreen view, this is one of the worst trades and contracts in NFL history. Seattle, amazingly, I think we all missed it when that trade went down with Seattle, that Seattle, I think, knew he was on the decline. I honestly think Pete Carroll in that front office knew. And we saw it. I think Shane, you can speak to this. We saw some declining, I guess, pieces at his last years in Seattle. I think that they got out of Dodge at the right time and got him at his peak value. And his peak value was a ton more than we ever expected. So Seattle 100% won this trade, as insane as that sounds from day one when that trade went down. Two is, I said last year that if I was the Broncos, I would have cut him immediately. The cap hit, I think, was $100-150 million, and I even wanted to cut him last year because I just said, look, this contract's ridiculous. You're just stuck with him. If you feel comfortable, you're going to have to be stuck with him. The Sean Payton thing, I'm going to be honest. I feel that, again, I have no sourcing on this, but I'll be real. I think Sean Payton said, in order for me to accept this job, you're going to give me 1 year with Russell Wilson, and if I don't like him, I'm going to cut him. And I think that's what happened. I think realistically, Sean Payton said, he went into that interview and said, look, I'm not the biggest Russell Wilson fan. I will try to fix him, but if I can't, I'm going to cut him, and I'm going to get a guy that I feel comfortable with. As weird as this sounds, I think the Broncos won this in that way. I think the Broncos are going to look at this and say, okay, the only reason Sean Payton is going to do this is if he doesn't like Russell Wilson and if he has a plan. I don't know what that plan is. Is that plan Jimmy Garoppolo? Maybe. Is that plan a rookie? I think that's more likely. I think the only reason this move got made is because Sean Payton said, I don't like this guy. I'm going to cut him. I know it's a huge cap hit. But I have another plan in mind. I have my guy. I have my Drew Brees successor, if you will, for this organization. Whether it's a rookie, whether it's a free agent. That's the only way he would have made this
move. His name is Bo Nix.
Possibly.
Let's go, baby.
Possibly. Possibly. Right? Like, he has a plan.
No, I'm joking.
And he has a plan. And whether it's trading up, whether it's getting a free agent, he has a plan. And he wouldn't do this if he didn't have a plan. Now, what is that plan? We'll see in the span of the next 6 months. As of right now, though, if I'm looking and seeing, oh, Atlanta will pick him up, well, whatever. Like, all these teams just honestly need to start fresh with a rookie. I don't, like, New England, maybe? I don't freaking know. Like, I'll be real honest. If I was an organization, I know there's going to be an organization dumb enough to overpay him. I don't know who it will be, but I know there will be. But I think secondly, if you look at his free agent market, I don't know why a team would want him for even 2 years, $20 million. I don't get it. Why get a guy who's clearly a diva, who clearly is going to, at the end of the day, want to do things his way, because he looks at year one with Nathaniel Hackett and probably goes, I should have made that work, and I'm going to do this with this new franchise. No franchise is going to want that. Again, look, statistically, people are freaking out because he's better than Mahomes. Be quiet. If you watch him play, it's significantly worse than what Mahomes has been this year. Regardless of statistical acumen, he has been significantly worse. And part of it is that we're viewing him from the lens of, hey, after last season, he needs to improve. I think he has improved, but it's not been tremendous. But, overall, I think Russell's at a place where he's going to have to find a landing spot. And someone might give him the money that he wants. Some of them might give him the starting spot that he wants. I think some teams are going to be as idiotic as possible to do it. If not, you're looking at maybe a year or two left at a starting job. Come to think of it, I remember Russell Wilson talking about playing until he's 40, 45. That's not going to happen. So that's my overall reaction is I think the Broncos did the right thing. did the thing they should have done last year. I guess the cap hit's better. Cut him, cut your losses. It's one of the worst moves in NFL history. You cut your losses, you move on with a better head coach than what you had in Nathaniel Hackett, significantly better in Sean Payton. Let Payton pick his quarterback and figure out the rest. Because regardless, I don't think this team is a Super Bowl contender anymore, but give Payton his guy and figure out the rest. It's the right move. And as for Russell Wilson, yeah, this is certainly a fall from grace. But really quickly, let's talk about kind of the beginning of this with the trade, with the contract. Brandon, do you think this is one of the worst moves in NFL history?
I mean, just from the Russell Wilson side of things, you know, I mean, the guys on, I mean, the Broncos on the Broncos side, you know, what you had to know you were getting a player in decline. I mean, the Seahawks knew they were giving away a player in decline. You had to know, like, listen, you had to know the guy was going basically to a worse situation than what Seattle had. You know, going from basically being a consistent playoff team, not towards the end, but a consistent playoff team throughout his tenure there, going to a team that basically had a bunch of younger but pretty good guys, but, you know, it's not a DK Metcalf, it's not a Tyler Lockett, it's not those guys you're playing with anymore. You're playing with, you know, what who's your best receiver, Jerry Jeudy?
And Cortland Sutton.
Yeah. But, yeah. But, you know, that's pretty, I mean, not far, but that's pretty significant drop from those two. You know, it's just on that side of things. I mean, you know, if you're Russ, you see the money, but it really wasn't worth it. If you're a Broncos fan, I mean, I don't know how the hell you were even hyped about that. I mean, you knew there was nothing left in the tank, but you knew there wasn't a whole lot left in the tank. And I mean, on the Seahawks side, I mean, do you consider that, what, do you consider that a fleece, pretty much?
I consider it one of the greatest wins ever. Yeah. That is one of the great, that is one of the most lopsided trades ever.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
Look at the return you got for it. You know, like, it's, someone just said, I actually just saw this on social media. What was it? The Seahawks have the funniest thing to do in offering a 7th-round pick to bring Russell Wilson back.
They wouldn't actually do that because the money would be crazy, but yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, yeah. It's not as simple as that, but still, it's just funny how, like, if you're the Broncos, if you're that front office, how can you look at that? Even, like, everybody knew it was bad at the time. Well, you know, a lot of people said, oh, you know, cause you hear Russell Wilson, you think big name, you think, hey, Super Bowl champion, all this stuff. You know, I know the Broncos are probably blinded by that, but to give him that kind of contract after the trade, which was already awful to begin with, like, what is going through your mind in the front office there? Even with him, like, how many times have we said it, you know, just getting a quarterback doesn't help you compete for a championship. You gotta actually have a team there.
Well, they thought they did. And also, I'll just say one more thing, Brandon, on this. Russell Wilson wasn't gonna play there if he didn't get a new contract. Yeah. He was not. So, yeah. There's that too.
Yeah, but to get the kind of money he did is also, it's still outrageous for a guy in decline. But then again, we always talk about the quarterback market, right? Like, what quarterbacks get paid, and the market is absolutely ridiculous. That's a whole nother. Well, that's not even a whole nother story. That kind of ties into this. Look at how bad the market is when you have, you know, a Watson and Russell Wilson contract, and now you have Daniel Jones making $40 million a year that he does not even come close to deserving. So
it's a joke.
It's literally bad on all accounts. I mean, the Seahawks, I mean, that's great for the Seahawks, but if you're the Broncos front office, you didn't just whiff. You literally, like, if this was an MLB postseason, you probably just went 0-for-30 and basically struck out with the bases loaded and nobody out, or with two outs to lose the game. So, you know, this, like, that's, I'm almost at a loss for words at how bad it is, because between I'm still stuck at thinking about which one is worse, Deshaun Watson or Russell Wilson. The more I think about it, the more Russell Wilson seems worse.
So, yeah, at least because at least he was cut. It's a tight race. Shane, what is your thoughts on everything that happened with the trade and the contract and how you think it stacks up in NFL history?
Yeah, I feel like the Deshaun situation, his contract, I felt like that was a bit worse, just because at least, I mean, in hindsight, you could argue that maybe it wasn't, but like at the time when they were signed, you know, they were the Browns, I think, you know, it made a lot less sense to pay that much for a guy who hadn't played in an entire year, who also had lots of off-field issues going on. I'm sure you guys have heard about that.
And it's fully guaranteed. That's part of it. It's mm-hmm. fully guaranteed.
Oh, yeah. Right. So, I mean, I think that's definitely worse, but... but you know, I mean, this isn't far behind. it's interesting. I remember when we got the news about this trade, and I was, what was I doing? Oh, I was cutting a tree down.
What? It's the most random thing ever.
Pacific Northwest activities.
Yes. Most people around here are tree huggers. We're tree cutters. nah, I'm joking. There was a tree on our lot that was, it was like, it was kind of dying and getting ready to fall on the house. So my dad was like, yeah, let's just get rid of the goddamn thing. I was like, okay. so we were out there cutting down this tree. He used to be a lumberjack, so he's got all these, you know, tools and equipment and whatnot for it.
I fail to see how this is important, but okay.
No. So
it's a where were you story. Where were you when story.
Yeah, because everybody in Seattle, you know, they say everybody remembers where they were when 9/11 happened or when the Challenger exploded. But everybody in Seattle remembers where they were when they heard this news. Okay. This is just a fact.
Yeah. I was at home. So we were cutting down a tree.
Of course you were. So we were cutting down a tree. And I start getting these notifications. Bzz, bzz, bzz. I was like, what the hell? So then I pull out my phone and I was like, oh my God. You know, I told my dad and he was like, what? Really? And then he's a football fan, but not like, he's very much a casual fan, you know? Even he says, Denver? Question mark. Like, why does he want to go there? And I was like, yeah, that's my exact reaction too. It just never felt like a good fit to me. I was like, really? I don't know. I didn't see it. And I still don't. And well, now he's leaving, so.
Clearly you were right.
I guess, but, I was like, okay, interesting. So anyways, and then, he was like, oh, okay. And then we, you know, went back to cutting down the tree, but, I was just sitting there thinking, I was like, this is bizarre. And then, you know, the last couple of years just been tracking it as it's gone down. And, you know, I think keeping Sean Payton over Russell Wilson is the right move. You know, I think Sean Payton is, he can be kind of a dick sometimes. That's among other things. You know, he's a little shady, but you know, I do think he's a very good coach. And I mean, it's clear to see when they had Russ last year, with a different coach who was, not even a good coordinator in my opinion, but they are, they were crap last year and now got the same quarterback, but this new coach and they're way better. So obviously, you know, the coach is the guy that's making that happen. And yeah, I think they're probably looking at drafting somebody. That would be my guess, especially considering, the financial situation they're going to be in with all of this. And also just the fact that there aren't like a ton of great already active quarterbacks that I anticipate will be on the market. So, I mean, unless they get just like a bridge guy or something, but I mean, yeah, we'll see. In other words, I don't think they're going to try and trade for a franchise guy.
Again.
And as for, right, what? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Not going to. Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear you. They're going to get Joe Flacco. No. No. And as for Russ, where he goes, there are several teams I could see making him offers. But the thing with Russ is, because of his status and his celebrity wife and various other elements, he's not just going to sign anywhere. I mean, let's just be honest. Like, if, let's say Cleveland offered him something, he's not going there. Like, no offense if you live in Cleveland, but he's not going to sign there. Neither him or Sierra would want to do that, I don't think. Same with like Minnesota. That's one that I could see making an offer. Depending on what all goes on with Kurt, seems like they're more or less done with him. And then, you know, there's teams like Chicago. They were interested a couple of years back. I feel like they're probably going the route of Caleb or some other college quarterback at this point. But I mean, that's something that I could see. But I think there are three spots where I could see him playing next year. They are Vegas with the Raiders. That would be in no particular order. Number one, that Las Vegas Raiders. Number two, Atlanta Falcons, like you said, Robert. I think that's definitely a possibility. And number three, I could see Tennessee making a move for him. And
oh, likewise, God, they have two rookie quarterbacks and Russell Wilson. Oh, God. Our young quarterbacks.
And likewise, I could see him being interested in Tennessee because he'll look at it like, oh, they got D-Hop. That's great. And they, you know, and I'm sure Sierra would be happy to go there because that's Music City, USA. Or, you know, one of the big music cities. So I could see that. Same with Atlanta. That's a very, you know, a lot of entertainment industry related stuff going on there between film, music, whatnot. And then Vegas, you know, same thing. And those are all three teams that, you know, I feel like they are going to want a new quarterback, but aren't really looking to like, maybe aren't high enough to draft like the guy that they're going to have right now, you know, unless they trade up. But to me, I feel like he is going to go one of those three places. I really can't see him going anywhere else. I've just thought about it in my head. It's like, I don't see a situation where any of the other 29 teams have mutual interest or have interest and he has interest. But I could be wrong. I mean, I don't know. I see a lot of rumors.
Unless you were Philadelphia last year.
Guys, well, yeah.
God bless America.
But, you know, I've been seeing a lot of rumors online that about a Seattle reunion. No way in hell that happens.
No. I don't want that. I don't want that either. No thanks.
I don't know.
I don't think, regardless if Pete Carroll gets fired out, which I don't know if he will, but I don't think he's been that great this year. Regardless, we've talked about
it. He won't.
He probably won't. But
Pete Carroll's going to die in that position.
Oh my God.
Yeah, seriously.
But regardless if Pete Carroll's there or not, nobody in that front office likes him. Nobody. Nobody in that front office. Yes. Nobody.
Yeah.
I can guarantee that. Nobody can. Or nobody has any like for that man in that front office. Here's the trade. Russell Wilson, Yumani Urike go to the Broncos. The Seahawks got Drew Lock, Noah Fant, Shelby Harris, Charles Cross, Boye Mafi, Tyreek Smith, Devin Witherspoon, and Derek Hall.
Jesus.
There you go.
Oh, man.
And I think both of them on the Broncos side got cut. Urike might be there still, but there you go.
God. Wild.
There's not even words to explain how bad that is.
It's like, that is, again, one of the single worst trades in NFL history for the Broncos.
Not all of those Seahawks have panned out. I mean, Shelby Harris isn't even there anymore, but,
yeah,
you know, a solid number of those guys are like stars in the making.
I mean, one of them is Devin Witherspoon.
Right.
Yes.
And
there you go.
Another one is Charles Cross, who is not a star, but he's, I think, on his way to being a solid left tackle.
Noah
Fant's been, you know, a tight end for them for a while. Drew Lock is a solid backup quarterback. I think Derek Hall is still there. I think Smith is still there. Boye Mafe's obviously had a pretty solid role on the team for a good bit of the last.
They're all still there except Harris.
Yeah. That's freaking nuts.
Yeah, so even though it'll be like, you know, even if only one of those guys pans out, it's Russell Wilson's not even there, like, anymore. So either way, it's still fleece. You know, especially because Devin Witherspoon is going to be a great corner for them, for Seattle. So, I mean, either way, it's still bad. It might not be exactly like the greatest fleece in sports history, but it's definitely still more than great return on investment.
They got much more out of it, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, for the Broncos, it lasted 2 years and, you know, hundreds of millions in.
Not even 2 years.
Cap hell.
Yeah. In dead cap hell.
Jeez.
But for Seattle, I mean, it's, you know, it's going to last them. Well, they've got
at least
the majority of those guys still here. Five, yeah, I was going to say
at least five, six years,
probably.
Yeah.
Since that trade has occurred, so, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Just unbelievable. Any last thoughts before we call it a night?
Oh, no, but you guys did see the trade in place that the Eagles were going to do. To
for
bring
us?
Russell Wilson to Philly.
What was it? What was it again?
Oh, it was.
It's Jalen Hurts and a bunch of other stuff.
It was not. Oh God, I hate to even utter it. Yeah, it was not good.
I remember the Jalen Hurts part. Hurts
in Seattle.
Who wasn't?
It was.
Sorry, Brandon.
Oh God, it was awful though. From what? Let me see what it was. I remember it was bad at the time, but even look at it now. Oh, thank God, bless America that didn't go through.
There were a lot of trades for Russ that never went through. Like, there was that one, Chicago, Cleveland. I think there was one with Minnesota at one point, Dallas. Like,
I'm trying. I don't know why okay. people are See, not.
Wait, the Seahawks tried to trade it many times.
Bro, do you? By the way, you have to understand too what I'm trying to remember. They don't show the specifics of the trade, but I know one of the pieces was Jalen Hurts.
It was going to be much more than a one for one. It was going
to
be
It was going to be like a couple first round picks, kind of similar to the picks Denver gave up. But you know what the best part about this for you, Brandon, probably is? The trade was done, but Russell Wilson said no.
Yeah, God bless. Thank God. Like,
surprising, honestly.
Like, does that make, like, in what, I'm sorry, in what world does it make any, like, if you were Howie Roseman, Jeffrey Lurie at that time, what the hell convinced you, what possessed you to even try to make a trade like that? Because you drafted Jalen Hurts with a second round pick, literally, like, what, the season and a half before?
Yeah.
So, or what, two seasons before?
I think it was like a season before, yeah, a season or two, yeah.
Yeah, like this guy was growing into being your franchise quarterback, and this guy was basically going to take you to, more or less going to take you to a Super Bowl, which Russ can't do anymore. Your answer to drafting Devontae Smith was going to be to pair him with Russell Wilson. Oh my God, you would have, you talk about wasting a great wide receiver's career, that would have been it right there. Oh my God, man.
The Commanders made a significant offer. I'm trying to think who else made a significant offer.
That would have made the NFC so interesting. Russ, Jalen, and Dak. Good Lord.
Danny Dimes.
Yeah. Who's the odd one out there? Man. That would have been interesting.
Yeah, basically there was so basically during that year he turned down the Commanders' offer and Philly's offer. Russell Wilson did during the combine of that season.
Yeah, well, Russell Wilson. Yeah, it's like what 22 or
yeah, early 22. 23? It was 22. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was, so yeah. Well, I mean, you know how the old saying goes, you know, if you can't beat them, join them. Well, Russell Wilson has beaten the NFCs repeatedly, so he wasn't going to join them. And I would know more than anybody because we haven't beaten Seattle in 15 years.
I'm sorry, so, you still haven't beaten Seattle at this time.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. We haven't beaten them in 15 years. Oh God. Like I can't, honestly, when I heard he left Seattle, I didn't care anymore. I'm just like, good, we don't have to play him anymore. And then we end up losing to Drew Lock. So you know what? I'm like, oh, like it got worse. Like it got worse for me.
Oh my goodness. Well, with that, I think we went 40 minutes. I'll add this to the back or the front end of the Christmas episode.
Mega episode.
That's going to be a big one. But Shane, Brandon, thank you guys for taking the time on such short notice for this. I'm kind of praying we won't have to do this again until the off season. Because we need our time off.
You never know.
You never know.
2 weeks left plus playoff. So.
Yeah, who knows? Thank you guys for the time. Thank you all for listening. On to the Christmas episode. All right, welcome to a special edition of the Sports Ethos Los Angeles Chargers podcast. Here with Brandon on Christmas Day. Merry Christmas, brother.
Merry Christmas, Rob. I wish I could say Merry Christmas to other Eagles fans because we're very divided right now, but that's okay. We did still a good Christmas. It's Merry Christmas anyway. Niners are getting beat. Cowboys lost. we take over the control of the division. You know what? I can't complain. I got a nice Christmas haul. I hope everybody else had a nice Christmas. So, yeah, we're here for this.
Yeah, we decided to do this on Christmas Day, partially because your Eagles played and partially because there were good matchups today. So we took Thursday off and just switched to Monday. Same with Saturday, of course. But let's start with your Eagles, because first I'm just going to let you kind of go off on what they did today, because realistically, they should have won that game in probably the beginning of the second half, but they basically only played, what, 2.5 quarters of football today in your mind?
Yeah, not even. Basically just two, because in the second, I mean, well, yeah, 2.5, I guess, is right. It's just... we kept saying the Seattle game was going to be the get right game, and it wasn't. They got beat. And I'm like, okay, but they still have the division in front of them. They still technically have the one seed in front of them, barring a miracle, which still could happen, because right now the Niners are losing, and they could definitely lose again to the Rams week 18. But, you know, it was all about getting, you know, coming into this game, you knew that the two seed was very much in play. You knew that the division was absolutely in play, especially with Dallas losing. You know, they knew all this kind of going into it, obviously, because those games were played before today. And through the first two quarters, I'm like, okay, it looks better, but it's still not where it should be. But I'm like, okay, maybe they'll pick it up in the second half. And they got worse. I mean, the opening kickoff, that's about as bad as you could ever have an opening kickoff. And I mean, I haven't seen a worse opening kickoff, I don't think, in all my years of watching football. And where Boston Scott catches it, he could have just called for the fair catch and it would have been out to the 25-yard line. There was no reason to return that in the first place. And then you return it, and then Zacchaeus just gets sent back into next week, and you end up just getting smashed and then fumbling the ball. So, and then, I mean, that right there changed the whole tone of that game. Because then at that point, you just gave the Giants great field position, and they put in Tyrod Taylor, who's, I mean, obviously faster. He's a mobile quarterback. He didn't have a great game, but when you have a mobile quarterback, that's been Philly's weakness for the better part of 10 years. So, and I mean, they scored a touchdown on that drive, all of a sudden 2-score game. Then the offense really can't do anything after that. And all of a sudden you look up at the scoreboard, it's 20-18. And you're thinking, and you've got a 3rd and 20 for Philadelphia, you know, what, early in that fourth? And you're like, what the hell are we doing here? What are we doing here? Because, like, it was bad. Like, I don't know where to go, because, like, they didn't even finish the game strong. Like, it's one thing to win the game. And listen, we haven't won a game in almost a month. It's been 3 weeks. But, like, Mike, this was a game you should have won by 20+. You should have won by 3 scores at least. And you won once again by 1 score to the New York Giants, who don't have a quarterback or good wide receivers. Or much of really a defense, for that matter.
And so I want to transition this conversation, because we talked about Brian Johnson for the better part of the season so far. Where has Nick Sirianni been? Because I think today, looking at the media, looking at the fight they had on the sideline today, which you can go more in depth into how that occurred. Part of the problem here probably needs to go on Sirianni over the last month more than we have discussed on this pod. Do you believe so?
Yeah. And I was kind of trying to get to it every week. Like, listen, I blamed Brian Johnson early on, but I figured that he was the one really taking the reins of the play calling. And he is still the one calling the plays. I know I've said it a couple times, but the more I think about it, you know, people keep saying, oh, this is Nick Sirianni's designed offense, but Brian Johnson's calling the plays. That's not true. Because there's no way an NFL head coach only has 4 or 5 players at his disposal and that's it. There's no way that's possible. So, you know, even in 2021, the offense, even though it wasn't great under Nick Sirianni's first year at that point, they had more plays in their bag of tricks than what they have this year. So that's definitely like it's definitely Brian Johnson, the play calling, but Nick Sirianni deserves a lot of blame, because like this was a 10-1 football team, but the problem was that even though they were winning, he didn't have the demeanor of a coach that saw the flaws and tried to correct them. He just figured, oh, we're winning. This is fine. And because he said it in post-game press conferences every single week. After the game, every week, he said the same thing. He's like, that was a good team win. You know, we look good at certain points. He never addressed any of the flaws, really, throughout the whole winning streak they had. And, you know, they always say, you know, winning masks, you know, your problems. Not with this Eagles team, it doesn't, because today they were on full display.
It can only mask it for so long, right? And the Eagles have been the epitome of that this season.
And I've said this before, and the more I watch this team, like, listen, I appreciate that Nick Sirianni, like, Nick Sirianni has a winning record with this team. I think he's a good coach, but before this season, I thought he was great. He was going to be great. I thought this year they were going to be number one in the NFC, and they should have been, and they imploded basically in this month of December. And, you know, I still think he's a good coach. But all the talk that I've seen from other people in Philadelphia and all the talk I've seen from people online, like, he's not elite. He's not even great. He's just a good coach. He's a solid coach. But he's a motivator. He's not a coach. He is a motivator. He doesn't know what he's doing with the offense. He's chewing people out on the sideline when a lot of it is his own fault. So, you know, I don't understand how, you know, this guy, he has to be blamed, because also this team is not ready to play every week either. They are not ready to play every single week. And that's against good teams and bad ones. I don't get how every week they keep saying we're going to make these changes. And remember, it starts with him as the head coach. They keep saying every week, we're going to make changes. You made some changes today, but that wasn't enough. It was still the same mistakes we've been seeing all season long. It is week 16. When is this going to this is who you are at this point. It's not going to change.
It's past the due date. We said Thanksgiving was the due date. It's Christmas.
Yeah, and it's like, it's making me angry, because this team can be so, like, I've said it all year. They are too damn talented to only be a lucky, listen, 11-4, most teams would kill for that. They would. That's true. They would. But here's the problem with 11-4 for the Eagles. They should be no less than 12-2. Or I should say at this point, no, 13-2, because 15 games, 16 weeks. So they should be 13-2 at no less than, and they're 11-4. Because two of the losses were awful. They were to a Drew Lock-led Seattle Seahawks team in which you let them down. You let them go down the field on a 92-yard game-winning drive, and you got burnt all the way down. And then Zach Wilson, I mean, he didn't beat you. You beat yourself. Those are two horrible losses. And then the Niners game was you were in control of that for one quarter, and then you stopped playing football. So really, you could have won that game. Dallas was the one where you got beat from start to finish. That game was over. That game was a track race from Dallas start to finish. But you can say, okay, you drop both those games. If you really just took care of business against the Jets and the Seahawks, you'd be 13-2. The one seed and the division would be over. You'd be resting your starters week 18. Now you have to play them week 18 in MetLife on a bad turf with a bad coaching game plan and it's basically a badly coached football team. So, like, I know people say, keep telling me not to say the sky is falling. And listen, it's not there. They're still a playoff team. They deserve to be. But this team, that's not the point. When you have a team that struggles to make the playoffs and you complain, everybody's like, oh, well, you know, they're just lucky. They're just happy to be there. You know, they shouldn't be there. But it's like, this team expects Super Bowl or bust. And it's going to be that way until they lose all their talent and until they start losing a lot of games in a season, not just, you know, three or four. So when you have a team like this, your expectation every year is Super Bowl or bust. So that's why, looking at this season, if they don't get back there, and especially I have concerns about them even winning a wild card game, if they don't get back there, that's a failure. And that's a massive failure. Not just a failure, that's a massive failure. Because then next year, if you don't get back there, for sure, Sirianni could be fired. So you got to make sure that if you don't get back there this year, that you better, not just have to, you better get back there next year. Because there's no excuse at this point to be playing this bad. You have you have, mind you, two wide receiver ones. You have a top five running back that you don't use until today.
They're not using DeAndre Swift. Can we talk about this? They're not using him at all. And he's their best player on offense right now. They finally got him 20 carries. And if you just kept running the ball with him in the second half, you would have won by 40. They never use him. And he's literally their best offensive weapon right now on this roster on offense. It's dumb.
The offense got in trouble in the second half because after they fumbled the ball and the Giants got within 10, at that point, when you see a fumble to open the half like that and the Giants are gaining momentum, you know how you kill the momentum? You take them out of the game and run the ball. And they didn't do that. They passed into oblivion, and it led to a pick six. It was some awful play calling in the red zone again, like it was all game. And on top of that, you literally let the Giants get within 2 points of you. So, I don't care that you won the game. It's unacceptable. You had two bad turnovers today. Like, that's the problem too. If you have two turnovers in the playoffs,
your season's over. You're not coming back from two turnovers like that in the playoffs. You're just not.
That's what I keep telling people. I'm like, this is why I don't have any faith in this Eagles team in the playoffs. They don't stop turning the ball over every week. They're one of the top, I think, three teams in the NFL in turnovers, if not the first. So, this is really, really bad because you had two turnovers against the Giants, and that's the Giants, mind you, and you only won by one score. If you have two turnovers in the playoffs, you're getting beat by 30. So that's unacceptable. It's just, it's bad. And this is the second game all year where Swift has had 20 plus carries. That's unacceptable.
And what was the last time he had, tell our audience, what's the last time he had 20 carries?
Guys, listen to me when I tell you this. It was week two. It was week two, bro. Week two. And then he had 28, he almost had 30. But you know what happened in that Vikings game? You blew them out. Because you did what you were supposed to do. I don't understand, man. It doesn't make sense.
So talk also about what happened on the sideline in this game, because I'm not sure if everyone saw that. The players went out on Sirianni today. They got really pissed at him on the sideline. There was a heated confrontation. Talk about that confrontation real quick.
Oh yeah. Let me just clarify something. They didn't blow the Vikings out. They didn't blow the Vikings out. They won by six. But the way they played that game, they blew them out on eye test, not score.
Yeah, that's fair. Yep.
That's what I meant by that. But because you wore them down. But on the sideline today, you didn't see much of it. They didn't focus too much on it. I don't think they knew what was going on really.
Daryl Johnston and Joe Davis were more talking about just the analytics of the game during that point. Didn't really focus on it too much, but the crew showed 5 seconds of it. So
yeah. So it's really weird because these problems have been building in the organization since the loss, not even the loss to the Niners. This was before that even. So this has been brewing since I think midway through the season, since about week 7 or 8. Because the problems have been there all season long. And I think players were pissed. Remember, AJ Brown was pissed at not getting the ball back in week 4. So
yeah.
this has been brewing for a long, long, long time. And for this to now it's reared its ugly head. Because now I get players being pissed. We've seen other teams and other games where players have gone off on their coach on the sideline and they've had to calm them down and they get the issues corrected a little bit but the coach handles himself well. For Nick Sirianni to then turn to his own sideline and start screaming at guys, that is both immature and that's beyond unacceptable. That just shows that you are not a professional. And not only does it show you're not a professional, it shows that you've lost the whole entire team. That's a glaring indicator that you've lost this team completely. That Devontae Smith gave you the death stare. AJ Brown gave you the death stare. Jalen Hurts is shaking his head on the sideline every week. the defense, Hassan Reddick apparently got into that scuffle a little bit on the side, that little skirmish on the sideline. So Hassan Reddick's pissed off. Like, when your defense is pissed at your head coach, that's a problem. Cause usually it's the offensive players. When you have a bunch of players, and you can even see it in Jason Kelce every week on the pod. He's not happy. He says he's not happy. He knows that the execution is terrible, but he's a good player. He's a great person. He's never going to throw his teammates or his coaches under the bus, but we know based on his body language and what he, and you know, obviously reading between the lines, we know this is a bad coaching issue. This is a badly coached football team. We know that. That's a fact. So to see that on the sideline, to see Nick Sirianni, essentially, because the game was also basically over because the Giants were driving down the field to try to tie the game. So, and all you had to do on defense was just make a stop, and they did. It wasn't like they were dangerously close to getting, you know, scored on. So for Sirianni to blow up in that moment was very, very worrisome. Not just for me as an Eagles fan, but it should worry every Eagles fan. You can't say that you're not worried about this team. Because if you're not worried about this team, you don't care enough. That's bad. And it looks bad from every eye test imaginable.
And then I also want to point out, and I'm sure we'll have Shane talk about this more next week when you guys play Arizona. But he's like, imagine Shane Steichen with this team, with this roster as a head coach. And Shane was talking about with us about what he's doing in Indy with Gardner Minshew, what he did in the first 5 weeks with Anthony Richardson, who we pretty much know is going to be their franchise quarterback moving forward, even though he only played like a month and a half. Shane was talking about like this team with Shane Steichen is a much different roster. And I think that, or is a much different roster and has a much different season. And I think he's absolutely correct.
Yeah. No, he's 100% right. And like, and the thing is, we've both said this, all three of us, I think, have said this at one point, that I know Shane Steichen wanted to be a head coach, but Philly should have done way more in their power to try to convince him to stay. I don't care what you had to do to get him to stay. You should have convinced him to stay.
He should have been your head coach. I'm going to be honest. He should have been your head coach at this point.
Like, if he was, that locker room would be in one piece. Everybody, like, it's funny because AJ Brown and Devonta Smith both have over 1,000 yards now. Dallas Goedert had a great game today. Like, the numbers were great, but the eye test wasn't. And the body language is even worse. So, like, if that was Shane Steichen, not only would the game not have been close, but they would have dominated from the very first snap of the game to the very last snap of the game. And they would have done it all season. Not just in this game. They would have done it all season. Because last year, everybody would say, oh, the Eagles had an easy schedule, which is partially true. But even against bad teams, they were blowing them out by 20 plus a week. And it was dominance.
Not winning by 8 against the Giants. Yeah.
Exactly. That's the problem I have. And everybody said, oh, it's not too much different. No, it still would be different because Nick Sirianni, he might be a good motivator, but he is not a good coach. Shane Steichen, you don't have to be a motivator if you're a likable guy, which Steichen is. And Nick Sirianni is not that likable. I still like the guy because I like his passion, but it boils over into big ego territory. And Shane Steichen doesn't have that. Shane Steichen's a good guy. Great coach, great offensive mind.
Again, look at what he's done with the Colts. Look at what he's done with Gardner Minshew the last month and a half.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's so, you know, I people that say, oh, well, they had an easy schedule this year, it would be different this year, even if Steichen was coached. That's not true. That's still not true. That could be more false. It's, you know, I look at it and every time I look at this team every week, I'm like, my God, like Nick Sirianni doesn't show me anything that he's a leader. Your head coach has to be the leader of this team. He is not. And then, you know, it's nice to say that your head coach looks like a leader when you're fiery and you're still winning games. But when this team looks as bad as they do and they're not winning games, he looks like an immature child. Shane Steichen does not. Shane Steichen was always Mr. Cool, calm, collected. You never saw him blow up on the sideline. You never saw any of that. We see it every week from Nick Sirianni. So I'm really concerned because, I mean, you like, listen, Shane Steichen, I knew when he left, I didn't, like, I knew we were going to dip off a little bit, but I didn't think it was going to be this big of a dip down. And now that it is, it just, I'm like, man, if this guy ever leaves Indy, he has to be brought back to Philly. He has to be.
I don't know if he'll be brought back from Indy from what he's doing there this year.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think he'll be there for the next 10 plus years. But,
yeah.
You know, it's just like, man, I'm just really mad about how it just seems that this coaching staff as well as this team just feels so complacent. Like they're just happy where they are. They're happy they made a Super Bowl last year. Forget winning it. They're just happy they got there. Like it doesn't seem like this team has any desire to get better. But meanwhile, when you look at the Colts under Shane Steichen this year, every game they improved in some area, some way, shape, or form. They
even
got
when
better.
Gardner Minshew's the starter, Gardner Minshew actually looked like a starter this year, as bizarre as that sounds.
Yeah.
It's kind of incredible.
You know, that's my two cents. I'm just so tired about talking about this team's issues. Like, listen, I should be happy living to love. They're 11-4, but how can I be?
Yeah, we spent 20 minutes talking about it. That's how bad it is. It's rough. Yeah. So I have the frick you, I hate watching you list, and I added a team to it today. This team played on Nickelodeon. I was even mad. And I watched the Nickelodeon broadcast. I'm done with Kansas City Chiefs. I'm done. You're on my fuck off list. I'm so done with the Kansas City Chiefs. What the hell is this? This offense was anemic today, non-existent. Patrick Mahomes looks like a shell of himself. Travis Kelce looks lost. This offensive line, which is supposed to be top five in the NFL, looks terrible. This defense looks average at best. Like, I don't understand how a Chiefs offense with Patrick Mahomes can't score points when all the Raiders did today was just score on defense with bad interceptions. You're telling, this is a perfect example. The Chiefs, like, 3 years ago, right? Every year they have a game like this, sort of, right? Even in the playoffs against Houston that 1 year. They have games like this. Patrick Mahomes threw terrible interceptions, throws pick sixes, the defense can't get anything right, and they're down by 20 and they come back. This team is not even remotely capable of that at all. This is a Raiders team with with Aiden O'Connell, who's fine, serviceable, he's okay. Look, the coaching staff is great. They got a fire on their belly. That's awesome. But this Chiefs team is not even close to Super Bowl contender ready right now. That was atrocious. That was disgusting. And as much as we talk about the wide receivers, we need to talk about Travis Kelce because he's been atrociously awful, especially in the last couple months of the season. And you can make all the Taylor Swift jokes you want, but they're clearly not in sync. I don't know why. I don't think it's just a Taylor Swift thing. I think you talked about this before the last couple of weeks, how their play calling hasn't been very good. I agree with that. Their defense is kind of just helping them along, which I never thought I would ever say with this team, especially in September. This offense is awful. It's just so bad, and they're getting worse every week. Like, We're at the stretch of the season. We have a couple weeks left. Over the last maybe 6 weeks, every week this Chiefs offense has gotten worse. It's unbelievably bad. It makes no sense. You could throw all the Taylor Swift jokes you want, and I'll do the same. It's pretty damn funny. But minus all that stuff, this team is atrociously bad. It's just awful. And hell, I mean, they'll make the playoffs, but they're going to – you said this about even a month ago. I think you said you think the Chiefs are one and done. I'm with you. I think they get smashed in the wild card by whoever they play. It's awful.
And it's – and you know what? Today, too, it just – it reached a boiling point with Travis Kelce being so frustrated. He had a massive – you want to talk about Eagles outburst. He had a massive outburst on the sidelines. And Andy Reid – could barely calm him down. So, you know, like, I know Travis Kelce is a passionate dude. Just like Jason, he wants to win. But Travis, like, he didn't just, like, throw his helmet down and get pissed and sit on the bench. He threw his helmet, like, so hard. Like, it looked like a lethal weapon. Like, That's insane. Like, he threw that thing. It bounced off the bench and went, like, another 20 feet. Or no, more than that. Like, another 40 feet past the bench and, like, towards the stands almost. Like, it's, like, it was, and the thing is, one of the coaching staff tried to get his helmet back. And Andy Reid said, no, don't give him his helmet. We're taking him out for a play. He doesn't deserve to be in there right now. Like, that's, like, you want to talk about the Eagles' problems? That shows how bad Kansas City is right now. They don't have a single wide receiver that can catch a football. Even Travis Kelce's had a down year.
Travis Kelce over the last month and a half has been downright awful.
He's been awful. Like, it's just, you know, I watch it, but I said this years ago, like, when Patrick Mahomes got his contract, and it was like, oh, it was, you know, there was people saying, oh, it was team friendly. I'm like, no, it's not. I'm like, watch. In a couple of years, when they're done, you know, getting off their Super Bowl run, I'm like, watch. When this team's going to stall out because they're not going to have enough to pay anybody. They couldn't pay Tyreek Hill. And that's probably their biggest problem right now.
But that's my point. We talked about the contract thing here, but watching them today, I'm like, yeah, the receiver's the biggest problem, but this whole offense is out of sorts. Here's the thing. Yes, we've talked about the receivers every week. I don't think we fully considered that it's not just the receivers. The whole offense just doesn't make any sense and is out of sync. The receivers matter, and yes, it's their worst problem, but I watched them today going, you know, they're not really, they're going to Rashid Rice. He's been great this year. I want to give him his props. Every other receiver barely touched the ball. They tried to get it to Travis Kelce. He missed a couple easy balls. Like, the only two guys that's remotely supposed to be good on this offense is Rashid Rice and Travis Kelce. They tried to get the ball to both of them. Rice had a pretty good day, all things considered. They did exactly what they should do, which is kind of let their other receivers kind of be decoys. And they still lost today, Brandon. They still got massacred.
And you know what's really bad to me, and I don't think this, nobody talks about this enough, and I don't see it. People talk, like, people want to blame the receivers, people want to blame, they want to blame, oh, Shane, welcome.
Hello.
People want to blame, you know, the receivers, and they deserve a ton of it. But you know what, people don't talk about enough, and I feel like we need to really, really sit down and talk about it. They miss Eric Bieniemy.
Yes, very much so. Yes.
Just like the Eagles miss Shane Steichen, the Chiefs miss Eric Bieniemy big time. When you have a creative mind calling plays on offense, it masks your problems. You know, you can get by even with bad receivers at points. Like with this team, it's the play calling is like they're still calling plays as if Tyreek Hill is there and as if Mecole Hardman can actually still catch a ball because he can't do that anymore. He's not even a factor anymore in that offense. And they're still calling it as if Travis Kelce, you know, is putting up 1,500 yards a season, and he's not going to do that anymore. So, you know, it's one of those things where it's like you got to realize these guys are getting older. The receivers aren't good. You don't have your play car that basically was the reason why you were so successful for years because your defense is still pretty much fine. You know, it cannot be undersold that they miss Eric Bieniemy. And I think that's their biggest issue outside of the wide. I mean, well, their biggest issue is still wide receiver, but that's right up there with it. That's like 1B is them missing him because, listen, it's not great in Washington, but Washington, you know, still had a couple good games this year when nobody thought they were going to win anything at all.
Yeah. So Bieniemy's still doing a good job developing Sam Howell, regardless of how we feel about that team.
Sam Howell just needs help. He's another guy that I hate that people want to talk crap about him. It's like, he's a good quarterback. His offensive line just sucks, and his wide receivers suck, and the team just sucks. So it's not on him.
Shane, aside from the receiving core for the Chiefs that we've talked about over the last month, and Merry Christmas to you and your family as well. Welcome in on this Christmas Day. What do you think is wrong with the Chiefs outside of the receivers at the moment? Oh, there we go.
There he goes.
His mic is bugged again, oh no. Let's see, he'll probably hop back in a second. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I,
It's not working.
Now it's working. There you go.
Oh, God right, bless.
Merry Christmas, Shane. Go ahead. Talk about the Chiefs outside of their receivers. What do you think is wrong with them, and what did you see from them today that made them lose that game against the Raiders?
Well, yes. Merry Christmas to you, Robert, and to you, Brandon, and all of our other brothers and sisters in Christ. You know, the Chiefs, it's interesting. And I noticed this morning as I was watching this game. I think, you know, part of, like you guys said, the lack of receivers, and that includes Kelce, because he hasn't been 100% this year.
He's awful.
Yeah. You know, instead of like training and stuff that he normally does, he's, you know, spending the weekend in Argentina going to concerts, which is great. I wish I could just do that. But,
dude, he's shooting commercials too.
Right. Anyways, so there's that, the loss of Bieniemy. I think, myself included, you know, we all underestimated how big that would be, because, you know, we thought, well, you know, Andy Reid is a great offensive mind, which he is. I mean, he's one of the best, if not the best, in the league at that. But, you know, two good minds is still better than one, you know? And I think the third thing, at least that I've noticed, is that Mahomes himself is just he's not all there right now. And I don't really know that he has been all season. He doesn't seem to be making his reads and progressions the way that he normally does. And he looks like he is much less playing the game much more careless than he has in previous years. And, you know, he's not being his normal self, for sure, despite the issues with the receivers. And you know, it really becomes apparent in these close games like this, when they used to be able to just light it up. And, you know, he was always the catalyst of that, and just running around doing whatever he does, dumping it off to guys. And, but now he's not really doing much of that. So, you know, it's interesting. I think today, for me, just all but confirmed that they're not a Super Bowl contender this season.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I mean, I should have had that thought a few weeks ago, probably, but yeah, it's just, it's not their year. And, you know, looking to the future, it's going to be tricky for them going forward with this contract. Same can be said for many other teams as well, but that's a whole other conversation. Yeah, and then, you know, the Raiders, good on them going into Arrowhead, beating a division rival late in the season, crunch time like this. That's not easy to do, especially in the cold.
They can still make the playoffs, guys.
They can still, yeah, they're not out.
They're not out of it yet.
I mean, they're, you know, they're almost, but, you know, they're, but, I know, and then I was telling you guys earlier, if they made the playoffs or whatever, and then, you know, knowing Mark Davis, everyone's going to, you know, it'll be, oh, Antonio Pierce, he's so great, oh, and then Mark Davis will be like, yeah, for sure, so we're actually going to hire this guy instead.
Why don't you hire Bill Belichick? Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, or something stupid. Or Matt Canada, no.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, Lordy.
Oh, no. You guys are going to make me pray to the Lord about Matt Canada on Christmas.
Raiders fans have suffered enough. Don't put them through that.
Oh, God. Shane, we were talking about the Eagles earlier for about 20 minutes because that game was ridiculous. But
Doesn't sound like you guys to talk about the Eagles for 20 minutes.
but I want to, you know, we mentioned this before we kind of finished up the conversation. We wanted to bring up what you said in our kind of pre-show chat earlier about what Shane Steichen has done in Indy and what he would have done with this roster. You wrote that in the chat. Speak to that thought a little bit, because I think it's really interesting.
Well, I mean, yeah, I just, you know, I've kind of had this thought in the back of my mind for a couple weeks now, and I thought, you know, this would be a better time than ever to get it out there. essentially, you know, I think a lot of Philly's problems may be more, I think Sirianni may deserve more of the blame than we originally thought. And I mean, maybe I'm crazy, but you know, if you look at how they started in the first half of his first year, when it did not start out good at all, with him calling plays, and then he surrendered the play calling duties to Shane Steichen for the rest of that year and then all of last year. And they made a playoff run the first season and actually did make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And then they made the Super Bowl the second season last year. They lose Shane Steichen. And, you know, I thought, well, yeah, he's a good coordinator, but this is such a great roster and Sirianni is a great coach. They'll be fine, you know. And I mean, they are 11-4, so you know, it's not like they're terrible. I mean, they're still managing. but you know, meanwhile, Shane Steichen has taken the Colts, who in my opinion are a bottom five roster, with a backup quarterback as well, just to, you know, just to throw a little gas in the fire. And they are currently in the playoff picture, which is just insane. I mean, that's ridiculous. And you know, I can't help but think if they still had, you know, him or someone like that in the building, or just even as the head coach or whatever, I feel like they would have definitely beat the Seahawks and the Jets. And, you know, San Francisco, maybe not, because that just seemed like a total mismatch on every level that particular night. And then, you know, Dallas in Dallas, that's, regardless of how good Dallas is, that's always a tough game. So, I mean, like, I was saying, thinking, you know, at the very least, they'd be like 12-2. Or I guess now 13-2 after today's game. But, you know, instead they are at 11-4, which is, again, that's still good, but it's like, I think we would all agree it's a pretty bad 11-4. You know, or not bad, but just rocky.
Yeah.
We've got breaking news, boys. Sam Darnold's in the game.
Yeah, Brock Purdy's in the medical tent. We have about 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter. The Ravens are dominating the Niners at this moment. Shane, how do you view Brock Purdy after today? We'll talk about the MVP race a little bit later, but just how do you kind of view him after this game just as a whole? Like, have we found some weaknesses in his game? Have you found it kind of watching him play today and over the last kind of month or so?
Yeah, it's a pass rush. That's his weakness. Which, you know, I mean, you hear that and you think, well, yeah, that's every quarterback's weakness. Yes, but how do they deal with it, right? Just look at this game. Lamar Jackson, he's been getting swarmed all night, but he's so damn quick, it doesn't even seem to matter.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he got absolutely torched, and the Ravens' O-line is actually really good. And he got torched.
Oh yeah. But he's quick, he adapts, he's very maneuverable. Whereas Purdy, what happens with him? Well, sometimes he can, you know, kind of dodge and move around and whatnot. But a lot of times he like gets flustered and just makes some ill-advised throw and turns into a pick or, you know, ends up taking an unnecessary hit, whatever it is. And it's just, you know, it's not a good way to play in January when you are inevitably going to be going up against much better defensive lines. Because, you know, when they play their normal style of offense and, you know, just the quick pass games work and he can just be a distributor, that works well because he's very smart and he thinks really quick. But when he has all these guys in his face, he's like, oh, what do I do? And, you know, part of it is that he may just be, it may be that he's a young player and he's still trying to figure out how to adapt through that. Because if you think about it, he really hasn't faced much pressure in his young career. He plays behind a pretty good offensive line and they don't really, you know, they have such quick passes that it doesn't really become an issue. But, in any case, it could be that, or it could be just that that's just not what he's good with. And it could be both. I don't know, but, yeah, so. And that's what's led to the 4 picks tonight and, you know, and now they're in this situation. So yeah, I don't know. It's kind of, yeah.
Sam Darnold just did what Brock Purdy couldn't do tonight. Throw a touchdown pass.
Jesus.
Hey now. Zinger.
Right now.
Brandon, right now it looks like this is kind of dubbed as the MVP game. Whoever wins this wins the MVP kind of thing. Lamar Jackson is the favorite in some sports books right now. Some sports books at CMC. Where's your head at with the MVP race?
Oh, it's CMC and everybody else. I don't care. I don't care how. I don't care. Lamar Jackson could have thrown 7 touchdowns in this game. Wouldn't care. It's still CMC. And if you say anything else, you're wrong. I mean, you know, CMC has literally been the driving force behind that offense for the Niners this year. Like, listen, Debo's been great, but he's had a couple games where he's been banged up. Ayuk, you know, been pretty good, but, you know, he's their wide receiver too. You know, Kittle is Kittle, but Kittle's not, like, you're never gonna have a tight end for MVP, and I mean, I don't think he's done enough to be MVP anyway. CMC literally, once again, is having a career year. The guy's got 20 combined touchdowns, which is absolutely insane. He never loses yardage. Every time he touches the ball, I've never seen that guy lose yardage. It's like that guy will literally turn a blown up screen pass into at least a 2-yard gain. It's like, how is that possible? I mean, if he goes, the offense goes. And if he's taken out of it, which I mean, he wasn't tonight, but at certain points he was, and you could see the offense struggled. Then, you know, to me, he's the favorite. I mean, Lamar Jackson coming to this game only had 17 touchdowns, 7 picks. So even if he throws, like, for me to even put him as the MVP winner, he would probably need to throw 4 or 5 touchdowns a game these last couple weeks to win it. And that's just not going to happen. So, like, you know, Lamar's got 2 tonight, and he's only thrown for 250 yards. That's not MVP level stuff. I mean, you know, he did what he needed to do tonight, but but listen, he did escape a lot of sacks, which was nice. Like, I think Lamar is still in there. especially after Purdy had the worst game of his career tonight. But, I mean, right now, if I had to put a list together, it's probably, I mean, what am I putting? I'm putting Dak in there, CMC, Tyreek Hill, who else? Probably gonna put, you know, like I would probably even say right now, Tua, even though Tyreek Hill is what makes Tua great this season, in my opinion, but still Tua. Like, these are all before I even get to Purdy's probably barely top five at this point, after this game, to me. I mean, you could even make a case. I know it's going to sound crazy when I say this, but if you actually think about it, it kind of is true. You could put CeeDee Lamb in that category because they weren't using CeeDee Lamb and Dallas's offense was struggling for a good part of this year. Once they started factoring him into the offense, they started blowing teams out and winning games. And he was having career nights like every other week. So, you know, you can make a case for him. So I think before you even put, like, Purdy is bad at this point after this game. He's got to be either at most four. And but to me, he's definitely like fringe around five or six after this, but it's DMC for sure. CMC is the straw that stirs the drink for this Niners offense.
Shane, where do you have your MVP ranks at the current moment?
Well, I mean, for me personally, it still is definitely CMC. I think at this point, I feel like it'll be Lamar unless something crazy happens. But like Brandon, I don't know how I feel about that. I think for me, it's between CMC and Tyreek Hill, probably. But I know that neither of those will happen because it's a quarterback award and it's stupid.
CMC's still good, though.
Yeah.
Because he jumped with this game. He actually jumped up after he scored that touchdown. He jumped up from 1,100 to 470. Plus 470.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it's still there.
We'll see. Yeah. But, yeah, you know what I want? I want, like, a punt returner to win one year. That'd be hilarious.
Well, you know, a massive middle finger
to everybody.
You know, a kicker won the award in 1981, so yeah. There you go. It was a shortened season or whatever. So I'm just going to name my top three right now on the podcast. I'm still trying to figure out my bottom. But here's my top three MVP candidates in this exact order. Here's my ballot right now. My ballot, number one, CMC. Think easily. Number two, Tyreek Hill. Number three, Jared Goff. Can we please put this guy in the MVP conversation? I don't understand why he's not in there. I don't get it. Like,
I think I know.
Is it just because he's had some bad games here and there, Brandon? Like, I don't, like, this team won the NFC North. The only thing good about this team is their offense. We saw it again against Minnesota. Like, this team won the NFC North, and the biggest reason, in my opinion, is Jared Goff's play this year. Why are we not talking about it?
It's, you know, and I think I know, well, for, I mean, I'm going to make a joke real quick about it. It's like, you know, the Lions are having such a great season that it's like, okay, we're going to give you that, but you know, nice kitty, nice lion, but that's it. Like, I think the day they put, outside of maybe like having Barry Sanders in the MVP conversation, the day they put a lion in the MVP conversation, like, nobody's gonna vote for a lion, which is sad, but it's true. And, he absolutely should be. The guy's gonna end up with probably over 4,500 yards by end of the season. He's gonna end up with probably 30 touchdowns, if not more. He's got only 10 picks, so he's not gonna throw probably more than, what, 14 picks, and that's being generous, so probably like maybe 12 or 13, not even maybe, we'll see. But, like, those are all numbers. I mean, like, guys, wait, he's completing, what, I think 67% of his passes. Like, I mean, he's doing well. He's doing well enough to be considered for it, and he should be. And, I mean, on top of that, he's part of the reason. Well, listen, I know Dan Campbell's a great coach, but there's no, like.
Who is making that offense work? Who's making it work? It's not Dan Campbell. It's Jared Goff.
Yeah, it's Jared Goff. It's absolutely Jared Goff. Like, Jared Goff has had multiple 300 passing yard games this year. Like, you can say, I know people say he's a game manager. I've seen that.
I think that's stupid. I think that's absolutely atrociously dumb.
He's absolutely not. Like, to me, Brock Purdy is more of a game manager than Jared Goff is. But Jared Goff, literally, I've never seen him make really a bad read this year, outside of maybe the two games where he struggled against, the Packers and the Bears.
Yeah, those are bad.
And he didn't really struggle. If you look at the stats, he didn't struggle against the Packers. He just, they just beat them. But, I mean, outside of the two Bears games, which, remember, they're division games. You can listen, the Eagles almost lost to the Commanders, and that's saying something. So, you know, I really don't even
count. Division games are tough.
Division games, I don't really count. When it comes to MVP, I don't count. I don't count them, but I don't take them
that seriously. As
the other one.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, outside of that, outside of the two bad Bears games, the guy only has 8 interceptions this year. Like, that's insane to think about that. He's either thrown 0 or only 1 pick in every single game outside of those two.
No, go ahead, Brandon. Finish your thought.
I was going to say, he's not turning the ball over. He's smart with his decision making. The guy's completing almost 68% of his passes. He's going to have over 4,500 yards, and he doesn't have a guy like Tyreek Hill or Jalen Waddle like Tua does, where he can just say, hey, F it, they're down there somewhere. I've seen Tua make that play plenty of times this year. Same thing with Purdy. Purdy has plenty of weapons. Like, listen, Goff got weapons, but not as good as those two, I don't think.
No.
So Goff, listen, I love Amon-Ra. Jameis Williams is nice. Sam LaPorta is going to be a great tight end, but that's not CMC, Kittle, Ayuk, and Debo, and that's not Tyreek, Waddle, you know, a two-headed monster with Mostert and A-Chain. That's not them.
And by the way, I'll mention this really quickly before I make my big point on the Lions. You could also say, look, Montgomery and Gibbs, yeah, they're good, but like they're not world beaters. Not the reason the offense is going crazy. Am I wrong about that?
Oh, you're right. No. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And to my bigger point, I realized something on Christmas Eve when because in the morning, if you were watching Red Zone, which I was, which I always do on Sundays, if you're watching the morning games on the East Coast early window, obviously on the West Coast or for everyone, if you're watching the early window on Red Zone, you know what game you watch the most of? Lions Vikings. Most of the country, I bet you, didn't even watch that game on Saturday, and that game was spectacular. That game was a ton of fun. Part of my problem is this, and Brandon, you talked about this to me earlier in the week, and I feel like most people around the country are looking at the Lions as like an 8 or 9 win team right now, and I think it's gross and disgusting. Now, look, we've said this for weeks. Their defense isn't very good. I totally understand that, and I'm not going to defend their defense whatsoever. I think it's awful. But the reality that we're just ignoring this team, or most people around the country, I don't think we're ignoring it as much as, you know, we're actually talking about this team, I think, pretty much every week. But I think nationally especially, nobody's talking about the Lions as much as they should, and it's kind of pissing me off. Other than the fact, oh yeah, we're going to celebrate because they won the NFC North, great. Like, I don't see a reason. When you look at where the Niners are and what they did today, you look at what the Eagles have done over the last month, you look at what the Lions are doing over the last month comparatively, and yes, it hasn't been perfect, but how many teams have good defenses this year? Not a lot, especially in the NFC. How is this team not a Super Bowl contender, realistically? Why are we just ignoring this team like they're going to get knocked out in the playoffs? I mean, Brandon, you've talked about this on the show. You're scared shitless of the Lions right now. I don't think other Eagles fans are. Like, why are we not talking about the Lions as legitimate? I know it sounds nuts, but from their history. But why are we not talking about the Lions as a legitimate Super Bowl contender with how weird the NFC has been, particularly defensively? Everyone's defense is kind of shit in the NFC. Yeah. Like, everyone is kind of similar in that way. Shane, go ahead.
We've been saying on this show this whole year, well, not this whole year, but the last few weeks, that we don't think the Lions are a Super Bowl contender. So,
well, yeah,
are we changing our minds about that?
Well, here's, okay, so I'm gonna be real. Let me give like a full scope view of the NFC right now. The full scope view of the NFC for me after tonight is nobody looks like a true Super Bowl contender, but somebody has to win it.
Sure. Okay.
And I think that's where, cause I feel like, so from a microcosm, we could talk about, oh, the Lions aren't a contender. Hell, in a microcosm, we can talk about the Niners aren't a contender. Philly's not a contender. Then who is? Somebody in that top three is making the Super Bowl.
I'm not going to say Dallas.
Dallas. Like, yes, I understand what you're saying, Shane, but part of why we're saying that is because I think we're not looking at the NFC and saying nobody in the NFC is that good. Okay? And to be truthfully honest, I don't know if anyone in the AFC is really that good to be considered a true Super Bowl contender at the moment.
What a season.
So how are we supposed to view it, Shane? Like, to be realistic, to be as realistic as possible, we can look at the AFC in a moment. To be as realistic as possible, I think there's only three contenders in the NFC. It's Philly, it's the Lions, and it's the Niners, right? I think in no particular order, that's your three. In the AFC, are we really sure there's like a team that you can point at that's like a contender?
Ravens.
The Ravens,
The Ravens, maybe? And maybe Miami, that's it.
Like, the Ravens, I'm not even confident in saying that. Right, so Ravens, Miami, is that it? Bills, question mark?
After what they did on Saturday? I don't care how hot the Bills get, they're still a bad football team.
Like, they weren't great on Saturday. Do you get what I mean, Shane? Where it's like we're at a point now in the season where it's like, how do we view Super Bowl contenders? There's probably only five, and even then, you can make an argument that every team has a distinct flaw that will kill them in the playoffs. Yeah. Every single team.
That's the thing. I mean, like, I don't. This season, I've never viewed it as there are no good teams. I view it more as there are lots of good teams that all just have like a big, like you said, a big flaw that can, depending on who they're playing, can get them out of the playoffs. We all know what that flaw is for every team.
Yeah, we all, it's Christmas, we know.
Yeah. This is going to be a season, I think, and I've been saying this for a couple weeks now, where in the playoffs, the matchups are going to be really critical because, you know, if there's any year where the best team does not win at all, and instead it's just the team that sort of got luckiest with their matchups, it's going to be this year. And that does happen like probably every 3, 4, maybe 5 years. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if this was one of those seasons. You know, whereas like last year, that definitely was not the case. I think it was very clear that, you know, like Kansas City and Philly were the best teams in the league, so on and so forth. But yeah, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how it all works. I mean, you know, we've been saying that Detroit probably isn't a Super Bowl contender, but you know, like you said, now after tonight and seeing how certain teams, San Francisco, have unraveled.
We said San Francisco was the number one team 2 weeks ago. I'm not saying that anymore. Like, it just changes every week.
Yeah, now
I don't want to overreact after one game, but yeah, it's Yeah, it's probably the Ravens at the moment. Which, like you said, even that feels weird.
I don't even think the Ravens are that good.
Yeah,
I
they're
don't.
not. They got, I mean, let's look at tonight. Like, yeah, they're, like, right now, they could still blow this game. They are literally on the verge of blowing
Yeah.
this game.
There's two. Yeah, they're it's getting
Well,
tight.
not
But like
anymore.
not anymore. Anyway. Like I don't saying the Ravens are the best team in football just pisses me off because I think over the last 6 weeks they've just been up and down. But again, every team has been up and down. So why am I getting pissy about them? Like,
You know
part of
what?
me is like, bro, like, every team's just getting, I think it's partially because people are freaking out about Lamar Jackson. And I think that's overbearing. But it's just like, you can feel that way about the Niners too if you want. Like, I don't
God. You
know.
know why? You know why the lines haven't been talked about? I don't know why I've been thinking about this the whole time. But to me, it's a case of a few things. First of all, everybody's all ooh and ah about the Niners. So that's that. That's their distraction there. And then everyone's looking at the Eagles and they're like, whoa, look at how they're falling apart right now after the midway point of the season. And it was, and then, oh my God, Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce, Mahomes. Wow. What's going on there? It's just, there's a lot of other.
There's a lot of noise, and then the Lions are just trucking along, not
The
saying
Lions
anything,
are
playing
up
good
there
football.
they're up there all by themselves in cold ass Detroit, just minding their own business,
Playing
biting
good football,
kneecaps and,
biting kneecaps, playing good football.
I just kind of get forgotten about, because they're not, they're not big market San Francisco or big market Philly, and they're not, Taylor Swift, Kansas City. They're just little old Detroit up there kind of doing their thing. To me,
Yeah,
that feels like the problem with why they're not being talked about, but.
I no, and I agree, but every Sunday I love watching Detroit. I don't know if
Oh
I'm
yeah, no, they're
I don't know
good.
if I'm one of the few people who just absolutely geeks out about watching Detroit. I love that team. Yeah, their defense pisses me off, but damn, that offense is so fun.
By the way, if you started Baltimore's defense tonight in fantasy, congratulations, you just got another interception. You got five interceptions from them total.
Jesus
Have fun
Christ,
with
in
that.
playoff semifinals or finals, depending on which, or actually semifinals.
Yeah.
My God. Rams, do you guys think the Rams have a chance to be a tough matchup in the playoffs, which is what they did on Thursday?
If they play us,
Play
depending
Philly.
on who they play, absolutely, yeah. I mean,
Because
I.
we're gonna get torched by Puka and Cooper in the playoffs, and Matt Stafford's catching fire. So.
I really want to see. And this is purely for the story and nothing else. I really want to see the Rams play the Lions in Detroit
It's gonna
in the
happen.
wild
It's
card.
gonna happen. It's gonna happen. It's gonna happen. It's absolutely gonna happen. I
Are we
think it's
sure
gonna
about
happen.
that?
I think so.
Right now,
Like, what if
it's
Detroit?
yeah, right
What if
now it's
Detroit
shaping
gets the
up to
second
be
seed, though?
yeah, right, well, right now it's shaping up to be Eagles Rams.
Oh, geez.
So it's
it
not
could
a
happen.
guarantee,
It's not a
but
guarantee, but
it
it could be
could.
there.
It definitely could. I mean, who? So, okay. Like right now, I feel like the. Because right now the NFC playoffs, it's San Francisco, Philly,
Detroit.
Detroit. No, sorry, wait.
Yeah.
Detroit,
And then it's
the Bucs.
Tampa.
And
Yep.
then Tampa, and then it's
Which I
Dallas,
think Tampa's gonna be
LA.
really in which I think Tampa's gonna be really interesting because they're getting hot at the right time.
Tampa, or sorry, Dallas, LA, and then Seattle. So, at the moment, yeah, it'd be, yeah, at the moment it would be LA and Detroit. And that is, as Brandon said, that is very interesting.
I'm gonna give you guys a dark horse list of teams I think can make playoff upsets. You ready for this? Yeah, I'm gonna give you guys a list. Rams, Bills, maybe. Okay. Bucks. Yeah, yeah. Bucks, I think so. And give me Cleveland Browns.
Wow.
If they make it in.
Yeah.
Cleveland right can now, absolutely make
right
an
now
upset.
They're slated to play Jacksonville.
They beat Jacksonville. Right. Cleveland beats Jacksonville right now. Brandon, do you think so?
Cleveland. I mean, I think they do. I mean, Joe Flacco has been real. Like, the guy came off the couch and is throwing 300-yard games for the Browns.
Imagine the Jets could have grabbed him, but the Jets said no. What a sack of idiots.
I mean, I don't think it would have changed. He would have went back to the same system he came out of. So I don't think it would have changed a whole lot. But I mean, it would have been better probably than what they have. But I mean, right now, like,
Amari's the goat for a reason. I mean,
like, you know what's crazy though? Like, Amari Cooper, like, bro, the guy had 265 receiving yards yesterday. 265. And the thing is, like, it wasn't like he was wide open, a lot of them. Flacco was putting the ball on the money.
Perfect throws all day long.
So, like, it's like, you know, that's just insane that he was doing that. But, you know, it's like between him and between how great Jim Schwartz has that defense playing, why couldn't they upset a team or two right now?
I think in the wild card, they can absolutely make an upset. I honestly believe that. I also want to mention this about Cleveland. This is what an actual franchise quarterback is, Cleveland. This is what it is. Like, Deshaun Watson.
38,
sitting,
but.
Yes, I get that. But it's like, bro.
I know what you mean.
Deshaun Watson is sitting up in the booth drinking mimosas. Doesn't even give a shit. You paid him 5 years, $200 million. And here's a guy off his couch. Actually giving a shit about making the playoffs. If they don't get rid of Deshaun Watson next year, I'm going to be pissed off. I want him cut. I can't do the, bro, how as a Browns fan do you accept Deshaun Watson as your quarterback next year? How?
They didn't even accept it when he got announced, like when the deal was done. I don't know a single one that liked it. They all hated it.
But what I'm saying is how do you accept it now? We just saw Joe Flacco and 38 just going crazy and actually making Amari Cooper being Amari Cooper, which is what he should have been under Deshaun Watson at the beginning of the year and part of last year.
Deshaun Watson is just a more talented Jamarcus Russell. There, I said it.
Done. Yes. Yes. Yes.
I'm done with him.
I'm so, like, if he is slated to be their starter, which I'm almost confident he will be, I will blow a gasket. Seeing what Joe Flacco has done with that roster, and I get it, he's 38, but Joe Flacco knows how to be a professional. How do you go back to that? How do you go back to Deshaun Watson? I don't understand. Trade him, cut him. I think if you cut him, it's like $100 million in a cap hit. I'll take it. You paid him a stupid contract. It's one of the worst contracts in NFL history at this point. It probably is the worst. Brandon, do you think it is? It's probably one of the worst, if not the worst.
It's up there. If it's not the worst, it's definitely up there.
Shane, do you think it's one of the worst, if not the worst, at this point?
Yeah. I mean, this is why you don't give guys massive extensions like that before they've even played a snap on your football team. Cleveland,
and he didn't, and he
Denver.
Didn't, and Cleveland, Denver. But not only that, he didn't play a snap for like a year and a half. And you still gave him that extension.
Yeah. For Denver, it made a little more sense because, you know, people were like, oh, well, you know, it's Ross. He'll be good. It's like,
basically traded for him. And they saw him play the year before in Seattle. But Deshaun didn't play the previous year.
I mean, they did trade for him, but yes. But Deshaun, he hadn't played in a long time. But bigger issue was, you know, he had just a little off-field controversy that he was dealing with. Maybe you heard about it. I don't know. But, and I mean, that was like, dude. So, yeah, that was, I don't know. That's a typical, that's a classic Browns move, you know, just.
Bro.
It's like, let's make a stupid financial decision? Sure.
Sure. Yeah. Let's do it.
Great idea.
And by the way, you might, some of you listening to this might be like, why would you cut him? He has a fully guaranteed contract. Dude, I pay him to get him out the door. I don't care. I'll pay him however much it was. I don't, what is it? 200, 300 million? Screw it. I'll pay it. I don't think he cares either. He's just there for the money. Like, just get him out of there, man. Get him out of there and get someone new who actually cares. Or build up DTR a little bit more. Cause he had a good preseason. He struggled a little bit, but he can go through some rookie lumps. I don't know. Do something. Bring back Joe Flacco next year. It'd be a million times better. So stupid. So stupid. Unbelievable.
What's the worst part about it? Like, Deshaun Watson, had all the talent in the world, but the dude is so unserious about football and so unserious about life in general. Like, he's a whole decade younger than Joe Flacco, and he's also way more mobile. And Joe Flacco is carving teams, and Deshaun Watson was throwing 3 interceptions against them all, like, in the games he played. Like,
he doesn't care, bro.
The guy does not give one shit. Doesn't give, at least could not care less about anything in his life because he got the bag. He got a guaranteed contract. Why would he care about anything else the rest of his life? Why would he?
Bro. And you want to talk about, and Shane, you can speak to this as a Joe Flacco guy, but you want to talk about legacy, man. What Joe Flacco is doing this year at 38, where we thought he was washed, it's unbelievable, man. Like, it's just, he comes in and off the couch and becomes a leader and can possibly win a play. If he wins a playoff game, I don't even care. I'm putting him in the Hall of Fame. He's done enough. Like, I just, bro. Like,
if I'd go that far, but
I'll put him in there. I don't know first ballot, but I'll put him in there.
Yeah, I mean, I've always jokingly been a Joe Flacco guy because, you know, as you guys know, after he won the Super Bowl, even though he didn't play that great, everyone was like, he's amazing. And I was like, whoa, all right, slow down here. but, you know, this year has sort of changed my perception of him. I mean, you know, it doesn't, or, well, yeah. I don't know if it really affects my, like, how I view his legacy. But I will say, I used to, like, joke about him and be like, oh, yeah, oh, greatest quarterback ever, huh? You know, Joe Flacco. But now I kind of feel bad saying that now because I kind of respect him. And, you know, just like you said, because of what he's doing. And credit as well to the coaching staff there in Cleveland. I think not just, you know, the quarterback injuries, but they have had injuries everywhere. I mean, Chubb, offensive line, DBs. I mean, their DBs are dropping like flies. They've had injuries everywhere. Yeah,
they've had they've had the most injuries in the league by a mile this year, by the way.
Yeah, and they're 10-5. Like that's not possible. But they're doing it. So I mean, you know, like hell yeah. Yeah, I mean, we truly live in a crazy time when the Lions and the Browns are like two of the top 5 or 6 teams in the league. When, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, that would have been a laughable dream. And, you know, now it's happening. It's like, all right. But
also, Houston, we have a problem. I'm just going to really quickly talk about Houston because it doesn't really matter. They got smoked, as they probably should have. So Case Keenum was announced as a starter. He was serviceable last week, nothing special. And then in the middle of the second quarter, Davis Mills comes in. And even the announcers are confused. And Scott Hansen's confused, and everyone's confused. Nobody knew what was going on. And then they announce, like two plays into Davis Mills, go, oh yeah, they're going to run a 2QB system the rest of the game. What? What? Of course you're going to get, but you're running a 2QB system in the middle of the second quarter and then just keeping it the whole damn game. What the hell? What are you guys doing? Just unbelievably stupid. If you install a starter, keep him in there. Davis Mills did not deserve to get on that field on Sunday, but whatever. Last thing, and then we'll talk about the Peacock game and then do our other stuff. But speaking of problems, Brandon, we have a problem in Dallas. They still can't win on the road, and they absolutely will not be able to win on the road the rest of the year.
Yeah, no, they're one. If they don't win a division, which I don't think it happens now, they don't. I mean, anything can happen because Philly is just Philly's Philly. But if they don't win a division, they're one down the playoffs. They're not going to win on the road. They're no matter who they play, whether we still got to see how seeding changes, but whether that's Philly, whether that's Detroit, whether that's they're not going to play the Bucks. So whether it's either Philly or Detroit, or if they somehow get past the first round, which I don't think they will, but if they do, you know, they would probably have to end up playing, or no, they wouldn't. Would they? Would they end up playing the Niners?
No, the Bucks is absolutely who they play in the wild card.
So, yeah.
They'd be the 4-5 seeds.
Yeah, 4-5. I don't know. I couldn't do the math. But still,
I think they'd lose to Tampa in Tampa.
Oh, yeah. I think so.
Unlike last year.
Especially without Tampa's defense starting to come alive again. Yeah. They don't have a single DB that could probably cover Mike Evans. Right, Mike Evans is on fire this whole season. Like right now, like as a Baker Mayfield, like Mike Evans is a whole different breed. Baker Mayfield's on a revenge tour this year. Like I know the Cowboys have a high-powered offense and their defense is still decent, but they can't win games on the road. And like the thing is too, in Tampa, especially in January, like my family, we have that house down in South Florida, an hour from Tampa. It rains every damn day down there. I don't think there's any way if that game is played in any kind of bad conditions, I don't think there's any way Dallas even scores more than maybe 17 points on Tampa. I can't see it, especially on the road. I don't know. Part of me is thinking, no, they're good enough to where they could beat Tampa. Either way, like if they beat Tampa, they're gonna get a big head and then they're gonna get blown the hell out on the road the following week. So either way, Dallas is not winning a Super Bowl. You know, nice dream to have, Cowboys fans, but once again, this ain't your year. So good night.
Good night, Shane. What's your reaction to what they've done on the road this year?
Not great. I mean. Yeah, especially in bad weather situations. If they play, it feels like Tampa is the most likely outcome here for them, going to Tampa for the second year in a row, which is going to look a little different now without Tommy. But yeah, no, I think Tampa wins this time because they've been pretty hot lately and Dallas, well, they were hot, but now they're kind of running with their tails between their legs. Probably not going to be doing much. Especially like Brandon said, with all the rain down there, I don't think it's going to turn out well for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not compatible on the road whatsoever. Their offense just sputters. I don't see them. I can see them losing a wild card game, especially in Tampa Bay. Let's talk about with the Chargers. I just want to talk about the fact this game was on Peacock Shane, how much of it did you catch on Saturday?
None.
Okay. Okay.
I was, we also were doing stuff, but.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know, I was just sitting there the whole time thinking, I wonder if Brandon Staley's watching this. yeah, which, who knows, but anyways.
Brandon, how much of this did you catch live on Peacock?
I think I caught maybe, oh Lord, I probably caught 5 minutes of this. That's because we had the box that we used to stream games, like, you know,
yeah,
from a third party. So, you know,
Superbox, which by the way, a lot of people do have. So, it is
but,
a thing.
I didn't watch it because I knew the game was gonna be trash. I just turned it on for the fourth quarter just to watch what happened. So I really just caught probably most of the fourth quarter. That was really it.
Now, minus the fact that it's very similar to the NBC broadcast, what was your kind of opinion on kind of how the broadcast looked?
It was all right. I mean, it wasn't that bad.
I watched the NFL Network replay because if you have NFL Network, there's this little thing you should know, which is they replay games all the time. Especially on days where there's like a couple games, they'll replay it like later at night. So I knew they were going to replay the Peacock game. And then I watched it while I was on the phone with you, Brandon, I think. And I said to you very clearly, this looks like shit. Because it's basically a internet broadcast being simulcast on a TV network. It looked like shit. It looked like 600p maybe. And like,
yeah, it was, yeah. It wasn't too terrible, the commentating and stuff like that wasn't too bad, but
It's the same thing. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
But, like, my biggest thing with the Peacock thing is, like, part of my problem with it is this. Number one is I think it's fine for a regular season game. But I don't see the point of having an exclusive wildcard game on Peacock versus having it on Amazon. And that's kind of where my issue arises. And I think you guys agree with this. Al Michaels is not going to get a playoff game this year because he's having that whole thing with NBC. Why not have Kirk Herbstreit and Al Michaels do a game on Prime, do a wildcard game on Prime on the first Saturday of wildcard weekend? Over them just putting a random game on Peacock. Because here's the thing, not a lot of people subscribe to Peacock. The numbers for Peacock are actually extremely low by comparison to other, you know, major streaming networks, I guess would be the term. So like, I guess it's to drive up subscribers, I get that, but it's like, why are we not giving, in my opinion, the best crew all season? And people might be like, oh, it's on Prime. Not a lot of people get that. A lot of people have Amazon Prime. Almost all of us have it. Because free packaging and all that stuff. It's basically just like a thing everyone purchases. It's a very common thing to have Amazon Prime, especially for our age.
More people have that than Peacock.
A lot more people do. So, like, just put it on Amazon. Like, Peacock, putting a game like this on Peacock, and I'm sure there's a lot of people, too, that don't even remember there's a wildcard game on Peacock. So, PSA, there is a wildcard game on Peacock, and I hope it's an ass one. But knowing them, it's probably going to be the best playoff game of that weekend. I just don't see the point of it. I don't see the point of, like, doing, like, if we want to test internet streaming for the NFL, and we should. I'm okay with putting a game on Peacock in the regular season. Fine. I'm okay with that. But in the playoffs, why not give it to the network who might have the most subscribers where more people could watch it versus just, oh, we're going to have a free trial of Peacock and it might not work very well. And I don't think the broadcast worked very well anyway. It just baffles me beyond belief. Shane, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree, but, you know, it's when it's an NBC affiliate, they're like, oh, yeah, let's do it. So, yeah, this is what we're this is what we're stuck with. Then
again, because I mean, like, if you think about it this way too, like, Peacock already doesn't have enough people subscribing to it. So if you take the game away from them, they really won't have anybody. Like, that app will die.
That app's already dying. It died in the UK last week. They were moved in the UK last week.
Yeah, I know, but it's like, Jesus, like, that's the only thing keeping them alive would be to get that damn game. But
I mean, they have the Premier League, but that's not enough for them to get subscribers.
Yeah, that's not enough, and not in the U.S. You know, U.S., you know, it's different. But when it comes to that, like, if they don't get those games, like, what are people really going to use Peacock for? Like, what, wrestling? I know they have the wrestling market, the WWE market, but
yeah,
that's really it. Like, but even so, people still don't use Peacock for that. They'd rather watch YouTube videos of old WWE clips rather than watch it on Peacock. So, I mean, you know, I don't know. Peacock is just, it's just another way to stream, but it's like people don't want to watch it because it's garbage. So
it's just my biggest problem with the whole Peacock thing. Again, in the regular season, it's fine. Who cares? But in the playoffs, why does this make sense logistically for the NFL? And here's the thing: is the reason they're doing this game on Peacock is to test how the audience numbers are on a streaming service for a playoff game. I get that, but why are we testing it on a low-end platform that is nobody? Test it on Amazon with the best crew in the business. That makes a lot more sense to me. I just don't get that at all. It makes zero sense. Amazon's getting the best youth viewership ever. Not everyone from that viewership is going to just tune into Peacock. It's not going to happen that way. I mean, it might, because it's a wild card playoff game, but most people are going to forget that they have a wild card playoff game, and then they're going to be like, "Oh crap! One of the wild card games is on Peacock. What the fuck?" Like, I'm sorry. This is how people are going to react.
And if it's two teams that have local channels for the games, they're going to watch it on local channels, not Peacock.
But yeah, and then the quality is going to be ass again. It's not worth it. I don't know. It's just like, as much as I love NBC, as much as I like what the NFL does with their schedule in terms of networks, not the games themselves, but in terms of the networks, I just don't think it's a smart move to just put a wild card game on Peacock at all. It's ridiculous. All right, moving on from the games. Brandon, are you ready to pay off your bet since Shane's here?
100%.
15 reasons, not 10. 15 reasons why the Cowboys are better than the Eagles with the Seahawks winning last week. Go so ahead.
You know how David Letterman would have, like, his, you know, 10 reasons for stupid things? Like, yeah, I have this for Philadelphia, for, like, the Cowboys in Philly. So I didn't put it in any real order. Actually, then this is why I came up with 10 off the top of my head, and then another couple ones I kind of had to think about, where I was like, I'm certain these are true. I have to look up the actual numbers. So these range from obvious things to, like, ones that are obscure. So the Cowboys have the all-time record against the Eagles, including the playoffs, which is 73-56. So 70-55 in the regular season, 3-1 in the playoffs against Philly. Cowboys obviously have more Hall of Famers, 32 compared to Philly's 25. Cowboys obviously have the all-time leading rusher. Philly has not gotten close to that, and no one else has, but especially Philly. Cowboys also have two receivers with more yards in franchise history than Philly's one leader. They're two receiving targets, I should say. Jason Witten, Michael Irvin both had more, and then the leading receiver actually in Philly's history, you probably won't get the name. It's Harold Carmichael.
It's Carmichael?
Carmichael.
Oh my god.
So, of course, with their winning history, Tom Landry is the winningest head coach in their history, 250 wins. The Eagles' winningest head coach is Andy Reid, who only has 130. Eagles haven't won in Dallas since 2017. Meanwhile, the Cowboys have won in Philly in 2021. Eagles haven't swept Dallas since 2011. They should have done it this year. They didn't. And then they got swept last year by Dallas.
I'm really paying your voice as you do this.
So, oh no, this is cathartic for me. This is cathartic when I dunk on my team and do anyway. So, this is an obvious one. I mean, this is subjective, but it's also, I think it's true. Dak is playing at an MVP level this year. Jalen Hurts is not. At least not in the past 3 weeks, but that was also after last week, and last week he looks like crap. Cowboys have Cowboys are a top 5 D this year. Philly is a bottom 5 defense. And then the last reason for the 10th one is Cowboys. This is every Cowboys fan that never has anything logical to say. Here's my dig at them for a second. Cowboys fans never have anything logical to say because the only thing they bring up, despite no matter how much the Eagles have won since 2000, since I've been born, against them and against the entire NFC East and things like that, Cowboys always bring up, they have 5 rings, Philly has 1. And then here's your bonus reasons. This is actually kind of funny. Well, remember, this is before these week's games. So this is after last week. So some bonus reasons. Here's my other 5. So in terms of former tight end, Jason Witten has more, this is just among the former tight ends of each team. Jason Witten has more yards and TDs than Zach Ertz and Brent Celek combined.
Jesus.
What do we got? Remember, this is after last week, so we're not counting these games today. Tony Pollard has more TDs this year than DeAndre Swift. He has 5, Swift had 4.
Again, not counting last week with that, or not counting this week with that, so there we go.
Yeah. CeeDee Lamb has more TDs than A.J. Brown this year, 8-7. Here we go. Oh, this is a funny one. And this is true because he's been Mr. Automatic. Brandon Aubrey is currently the NFL scoring leader. Jake Elliott is 8th.
Jesus.
Also, Brandon Aubrey hasn't missed a field goal this year. Jake Elliott, I think, has missed like 1 or 2. He hasn't missed many, but he's missed 1 or 2.
Can I pause you for a second?
Yeah.
Really quick. Brandon Aubrey deserves Rookie of the Year consideration. It's in some Absolutely. Way, shape, or form. But continue.
And the last one, just, I think this hurts me a lot because this was heavily tilted in the Eagles' favor last year, and it's not this year. Cowboys are top 3 in turnover differential this year. They're plus 9. Eagles are near the bottom. I think they're just outside the bottom 5. They're negative 6.
Jesus.
So, yeah, there you go. There's 15 reasons.
Shane, does that satisfy the bet for you? That was pretty good for me.
We need another 10 now.
I can find
another 10.
No. That'll do. I appreciate it.
You seemed very sad reading that, I'm going to be honest.
You did.
Because, you know,
as it was going, I could just hear, "Hello, darkness, my old friends."
I had a concussion grenade going off in my head, pretty much. You know, when you hear that ringing, that tinnitus in your ear from it, it's like that. That's exactly what I have going on right now. But no, it's not. It's crazy. It pains me, but it also doesn't because the Eagles deserve to get dunked on with they're 11-4. Cowboys are 10-5. Cowboys are still the better football team right now. Listen, I can say this. Cowboys, I've never met a Cowboys fan that has given me one legitimate argument as to why they are better, like currently, than the Eagles. And I've never met a Cowboys fan that if they're under the age of 30, most of them don't know ball. And most of them only bring up that they have 5 rings. Bro, you weren't even alive for any of them. I've seen my Eagles make the Super Bowl 3 times in my lifetime. You haven't seen the Cowboys make one in 30 years. So, you know, as much as I would love to sit here and give you even more reasons as to why the Cowboys are better throughout their history, recent history favors the Eagles. And I'm proud of that. And that's why it's going to stay because, you know, we them boys, this our year. Yeah, no, it's not. You're going to be one down in the playoffs. So enjoy your little run where you were blowing crappy teams out by 30 every week because that's over.
Oh, look at this. The Giants actually have been officially eliminated from playoff contention. There we go. They're done.
I thought they were before the game.
No, they were today.
Somebody on the broadcast lied then because someone said they were.
Yes. All right. How the Grinch Stole Christmas, Jim Carrey 2000 was our movie pick this week. I also watched the 60s version, as you guys said. Shane, as always, you open it up. This is more of a group decision, but what are your thoughts and feelings on this film?
Well, first of all, did you watch the cartoon first?
Yes. Okay, with my mom. By the way, excellent. I watched the movie and the cartoon with my mom. So there we go.
So, this movie to me is very impressive in many ways because I always thought that this was a story that did not lend itself to live action at all because it's such a, you know, it's a Dr. Seuss book, right? It's such a unique art style. It's something that really looks great for animation, but translated to real life can look weird. Cat in the Hat. Or it can just be, you know, very difficult to emulate it and make it look not just make it look weird, but make it look, I guess, you know, sort of like natural, or I don't know. Anyways. But this movie does that very well, I think. I feel like it totally brings Whoville to life in a very clever way that is true to the source, but also works really well on camera. And, you know, it's just weird enough that it feels like it's kind of this different thing, but not so weird that it's like totally foreign and unrelatable to us. And, you know, the hair and makeup for everybody is just ridiculous. I mean, dude, there was hours and hours for every actor, every day, doing hair and makeup. And it paid off. I mean, you know, it's obviously, but, yeah, this whole movie was shot indoors in sound stages.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I mean, they built all these crazy, large, elaborate sets and props and everything, which to me is very impressive because it shows such a keen attention to detail. And, you know, you don't always see that in movies like this where it's all, you know, sets that are built up and, sometimes you do, like, Pirates of the Caribbean movies are really great with that, but, you know, then you have, you know, Batman v Superman or the Star Wars prequels where, it's quite literally just a green background and like nothing else, nothing that they interact with, nothing at all. You know, so, yeah, but, you know, and then adapting a short story like that to a feature length film is also very difficult. But it can also be, you know, you can take a lot of creative liberties with it. And, you know, I mean, this is a relatively simple story. It's just, you know, it's a guy who hates Christmas and he's like, I'm going to ruin Christmas for them. So he just goes down to the town, you know, does his thing and then he has a change of heart. Okay. Yeah. That's about a 30-minute story, but when you make it a feature length, obviously you have to elaborate so they can show a little bit of his upbringing and how he got the way he was. And, you know, and then showing him, you know, in the town trying to kind of interact and integrate himself in there, but just feeling like an outcast, and then showing how his relationship with, the girl, I always forget her name, Mary. Cindy Lou Who or whatever.
Oh, Cindy Lou and then Mary, yeah.
Mary, yes, thank you. You know, showing how that develops and ultimately contributes to his change of heart in the end. And, you know, you just, you have all these different options, and I think they explored that all really well. I mean, you know, it certainly could have been just a bunch of useless, nonsensical filler, like often happens with, with these cases where it's a short story adapted into a feature, but, which I would say is what happened with the Benedict Cumberbatch Grinch movie, but you know, that's an Illumination movie, so of course it was ass. In any case, I thought this was a wonderful, adaptation, and, you know, it was a perfect way to bring a story like this to life, I think. But what do you guys think?
Brandon, I'm gonna go first. I know this is one of your favorite movies ever. This movie's ass. Let me finish. This movie is awful. It is so atrociously bad. Minus Jim Carrey, every actor is awful. Cindy Lou is terribly cast. She's a terrible Cindy Lou. Sorry, dunk on a kid. She's fucking awful. The parents are awful. The noses of the guys freak me the fuck out. Mary, I'm sorry, just wants to fuck the Grinch raw. That's all she wants to do. It's so fucking clear. It's absolutely disgusting.
Oh, wait, Martha. There you go.
Or Martha. Yeah, Martha. Yeah, she just wants to fuck him. She just wants to have sex with him. That's all it is. The whole movie is sort of a sexual fetish with this guy. It's so fucking clear. It's just a sexual fetish. Jim Carrey's wonderful. It's one of the worst movies I've ever seen, but it's also perfect. But it's also absolutely perfect. And you know why? You know why it's absolutely perfect? Because they just said, fuck it. We'll do whatever we want with this story. We'll be as elaborate and as wild and as dumb as we possibly can. We'll put Jim Carrey in the title role and we'll just make a film. And they saw and they did that perfectly. This movie is horrible, but it's also absolutely perfect because Jim Carrey is perfect in it. The makeup is perfect, minus their noses. I think that was disgusting. Like, they just decided, what if we take the Grinch, take this very simple story, and go balls to the wall in the most eccentric way possible? It is awful, but it's awful in probably the best way possible. It's kind of like, Brandon, you know what I kind of compare this to? I compare this to, like, Batman Returns with the Penguin. The movie's awful, but there's parts of it that you really, really like. It's basically that. It's a really bad movie. Jim Carrey's wonderful in it. Cindy Lou is awful. The parents are awful. The commercialism was really funny, because that's what Christmas has kind of been over the last 20 years. It's such a bad movie. Especially compared to the 60s cartoon, which is a breath of fresh air. It's just the book. All it is the book, but it's wonderful. I think the Illumination Grinch is 1,000 times better than this movie. But at the same time, as much as I think this movie is awful, I did quite enjoy the awfulness because it just went balls to the wall. And I respect it. I respect it. I get why this is a Christmas classic. In my opinion, it was an absolutely awful movie, but it's a good awful movie. It's definitely one I'll watch again on Christmas. But that's my opinion. Brandon, what's the you? I think I don't know if you mentioned this last week, but who's the rock star? Who's the character? Who's the actor that became a rock star / character in real life after this movie?
That would be Taylor Momsen, who played Cindy Lou Who.
There you go! We have a rock star! Who's a much better rock star than she was as Cindy Lou. So props to her. And who is she again?
The crazy thing is that like it's not just like she's any rock star. She is massive in the alternative rock, alternative metal, like that scene, like that whole community. Like they're one of the best selling bands currently of the past 10 years.
And what's the band again to tell our audience?
The Pretty Reckless.
Pretty Reckless.
They're a hard rock band. I saw them live. She is fantastic. I'm so glad she chose to be a musician over an actor. They're fantastic though. She said like after this role and after a few more roles, like as she got into being like a teenager and into a young adult, she didn't want to act as much. Her real heart was in music. So, you know, it does make sense that she's turned it into an absolutely fantastic career.
Go ahead, Brandon. Go ahead. Give us your thoughts on your rewatch here.
Yeah, when it comes to this movie, I mean, I didn't think she was that bad. There is a couple awful moments where I'm like, oh, that's a little cringy. But even for a child actor, I'm like, oh, that's a little bit weird. But regardless, like, I mean, this is a Jim Carrey star vehicle. That's what this is. And that's why it's become a Christmas staple, because Jim Carrey is so ridiculous in this movie and in the best way possible that it's what makes it a Christmas classic. It's why they show it every year on TV. It's why you can watch it, you know, on any streaming service, because some of the movies you can't.
Yeah, it's on Freeform. We watched it on demand on Freeform. Super easy.
Yeah. And that's what I did for my rewatch today. And also because I just wanted to watch it. I love watching that movie on Christmas. It's crazy that the actors were bad, because all those actors are well-known names. All of them. There's Jeffrey Tambor, who plays the mayor. He's done so many different things in his career. He's fantastic in other things that he does. Molly Shannon plays, what's her name? Betty Lou Who. And she is a former SNL star, Saturday Night Live, and also she was from, I know her from A Night at the Roxbury, one of my favorite comedy movies ever, Will Ferrell. Who else? Oh yeah, Clint Howard, which is Ron Howard's brother, obviously the director. And Ron Howard was a good actor back in his day himself. I love the fact that the humor's dark. I love dark humor. So I love stuff like this. I love that the humor is wild. I love there's a lot of inside jokes. I love that there's a lot of like wink wink moments. I love that he breaks the fourth wall. Because you didn't see that a lot in movies back at that time.
Yep.
So that was pretty cool.
Still don't really.
Yeah. Deadpool, that's it.
But
She-Hulk, but yeah.
Yeah, but the main thing, and even Ron Howard said this too, I think in a few interviews back in the day when this movie was coming out, and also I think they said it to this day, the main thing about this movie, besides Jim Carrey being an absolute beast, is the fact that, this movie focused so much on set design, on stunts, on just the art of it. This was an artsy, basically this was somebody's art project. This was somebody's acid trip art project.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
And that was Ron Howard's acid trip art project. And that's what makes it so great though, because I don't like movies that can bore me, and this never does, because whether it's a cringy moment or whether it's funny or whether it's like, and the thing is too, not for nothing, you like, even if you think this is an awful movie, which a lot of people still do, but it's Christmas classic for a reason by this point after 23 years, is, well, A, that this is the movie that made Jim Carrey, like he was already known on this side of the world, on the Western side of the world, but this is what made him known worldwide. And this is also basically, you know, with this movie, it's just the fact that it's, how can I describe it? It's just become a cult classic, not just because the story was known beforehand, well known beforehand, but the creative liberties they made were so wild. The story they told was dank and a little bit eerie, but also, like, you know, it also had its sweet and tender moments. And if it's like you pay attention, I love that they make fun of a lot of other genres of movies. They poke fun at the action genre when the car explodes. And he's, you know, he's diving away from the explosion. So they make fun of the action genre there. They actually make fun of movies themselves when he puts on that director's cap in his cave and he's telling Max to play a part for him to show him he can be like Rudolph, and he pops his nose off. And he's like, brilliant! You reject your own nose because it represents someone's like the fall of commercialism or something like that.
Yeah. I also really quickly say this too before you finish, Brandon. Max is always the best character in every edition of this film. Max is good.
It's pretty good. But the thing, that's what I was trying to get at. What makes this movie so special too is also, after all these years, I've known people who are my age. I know people who are in their 40s. There is quotable line after quotable line after quotable line in this movie. Nothing but quotable lines. I mean, they all come from Jim Carrey. But, like, the scene where he checks his schedule and he's like, like, that is a scene that...
4 o'clock, I'm wallowing in my own self-pity.
Yeah. Like, that is a quote that I make almost every second of every day. And people know exactly where it's from. And I'm like, yep, because you know why? That's me. I don't have an actual job right now. So I'm like, that is my schedule every single day that I wake up. But like, you know, especially, he's like, oh, when he finds it odd that nobody calls him, but it's also because when he leaves the answering machine on, his message is threatening them. They gut them like a fish. Like, there's so many memorable moments in this movie and memorable quotes, and Jim Carrey is such a star. Like, he was a star before this, but even more after this. Like, and then if you look at the fun facts about it, it makes you appreciate the movie more. The time it took to get them all in makeup, the extensive hours they worked on set, not just for the actors, but for the set designers, the makeup artists, the everything of, like I said, this is probably, I mean, there's been plenty of movies that have gone, you know, very, very artsy and very, very creative and things like that since then. But this movie was like the biggest one at that time to really be like, this movie is like beyond creative. Like it's something where it's like, it's Christmassy and you know what the story is, but my God, do they pull it off so well. Like just with, and that's why I love it, just because I appreciate the art form of it, of how they did everything, and I always find new fun facts every day that I'm looking up about this movie, and it makes me love it even more. It makes me appreciate it even more. But like, you know, this movie for me is like a 7 out of 10 on a regular scale, maybe a 6 out of 10. But for a Christmas movie, this movie is one of my top 5 favorites of all time, and it's probably my favorite ever, and that's never gonna change. I love this. My favorite Christmas movie ever. It's because I love that I can relate to the Grinch. I can be a very grouchy person. I can be very negative. Yeah. And I love, you know, I love to stir the pot sometimes with some things that I say. And I love I love the fact that I can relate to him with certain things. So of course I'm a little bit biased also. I mean, it's a silly kitty reason, but my favorite color was green growing up. And when I saw him on TV when I was little, you know, when the movie came out when I was little, especially on TV, obviously green, I gravitated towards that. So green, you know, I like the fact that it's just like, and also just Jim Carrey is the only one that can pull something like, cause they said that they wanted somebody when they were considering making this movie, they wanted somebody that could either be there was one of four people that they potentially wanted. It wasn't like they cast them. They just potentially wanted when they thought about making this movie. They wanted Jim Carrey, Jack Nicholson, Robin Williams.
People say Robin Williams would have been good for this movie. He would have been terrible. I know Mrs. Doubtfire is Mrs. Doubtfire, but I don't think it would have worked.
Yeah, because Robin Williams, I mean, he's done a lot of against role type of, you know, against type roles, but this movie doesn't seem like it would fit him for whatever reason.
Yeah, what's the last one, though?
And I forget, the last one was somebody that wouldn't have made sense. I can look it up real quick. Give me 2 seconds. Fun facts about Jim Carrey's grant. Like, there was one more. It was somebody I didn't agree with either. Where is it? Wasn't on screen. Oh, Mental Floss. That's where it was. It was. Oh, and Dustin Hoffman.
That's
would
weird.
That would have been completely wrong. So,
like, Jack or Robin, I could see those, but...
Well, yeah, well, the reason
why... I mean, it's not Jim, but, like, those I get.
The reason why they probably wanted Jack is because what he did with the Joker.
Yeah.
So, that's why. But I think at that point, he also would have been probably too old for it, too.
Yeah.
Jim Carrey was just the right age for this kind of movie, too. So, like, and Jim Carrey, like... And the thing is, what got him the part, believe it or not, was he went to Audrey's house, which is obviously Dr. Seuss's widow, and she wanted to talk to him, but she didn't want to talk to Jim. She wanted to talk to him as if he was in character. And you know what he showed up to the meeting with, like, and what character he played? He showed up as his Man on the Moon character, Andy Kaufman.
I gotta watch that movie.
And she said that when she told him to make a Grinch face, he made that smile, that creepy smile he made in the movie. She knew immediately that she wanted him to be the Grinch. So, to me, it's just perfect how it all came together too. So, it's one of my favorites for all those reasons. I love it. It's never going to change out of my top five. I feel like, we should have done it this week, but we're not going to have time. Obviously, we don't have time. We went over, but I was going to say we should have done like our top five, like rankings of Christmas movies.
We can do it next week. I'm down to do it next week.
Yeah. That's fine.
It's New Year's, so we can do it. Oh my god. This is gonna finish last on my list. It's so bad, but it's so good at the same time. Jesus. I know this is probably gonna finish high for you, Brandon. Shane, where do you have this in the rankings of the movies we've done?
I mean, it's definitely lower. Like, it's... See, the praise that I gave it earlier, right... I should have clarified. That was all, like, in the context of a Christmas movie and B, a movie that is adapted from a short source material. For those criteria, the bar is already very low. Because, let's be honest, Christmas movies, as fun as they are, they're not particularly well made usually.
Yeah.
And, you know, adapting a short story like that to a full-length movie is usually a disaster. So considering those things, this movie is excellent. But yeah, I mean, it's not like, you know, I've never watched this movie, even as fun as it is and as creative as I think it is, I've never watched it and thought, oh, yeah, this is amazing. This is cinema right here, you know? It's like, no, that's not what it is.
No.
But it shouldn't be, like... It's, you know, it's because it's a fun Christmas movie. So,
yeah.
You know.
Again, I feel like they had a goal with this movie and they hit it, right? Like, sometimes it's never about making it – like, people have to understand, there's some movies where the intention is to make an amazing film, right? Like this year, Oppenheimer, right? I think it's a perfect example of that. The intention is to make a cinematic film. Some people, they do a film and their intention is just to throw things at a wall and just have fun and be ridiculous. And this movie hits on that. So as much as I think this movie's horrible, it's horrible for a good reason. They didn't, and that's another thing too. I just love when actors have fun with their roles. Jim Carrey had so much fun doing this. You can tell. And it's awesome. It's just awesome to see that. So that's kind of my opinion on this film. I think it's horrible, but I think regardless of it being really bad, I do enjoy the fact that they're just like, all right, we want to make this movie. We want to make it as crazy as possible. We want to adapt this source material. Let's just go for it. And they hit it right on the head. So that's my overall opinion on that. Shane, what are we doing for New Year's? We're probably going to record on like a Tuesday or a Wednesday after New Year's, like the second or the third. So we won't see you guys for another week. But what's our New Year's film?
That's a great question, Rob. And I don't have an answer for you at the moment.
That's fine. We can wait. We have like a whole week to figure it out.
I mean, yeah. So this was... Let's see. So last week when we did Brokeback Mountain, that was the last movie on my list of ones for us to do.
You have two more weeks left, by the way. Week 18, you have to go out with a bang, and obviously during the playoffs, we're going to do Pan's Labyrinth to right. sublet what we missed on that week.
Or wait. No, since Pan's Labyrinth is back in January, you said? Like, do we know when in January it's on Tubi?
I think we're going to do it like conference title week.
Do you know when it's on Tubi? Like, is it January 1st?
Let me look, because that would help. Next. Let me look.
Because if it's on early January, we can save it for week 18.
We can, but I also want to make week 18 like Shane's big... like his big... finale, I guess.
Well, yeah, because I was gonna say,
because I want that's the
case, because I was thinking we
do it this week.
Yeah, but like I can do it week 18. It's no big deal.
Let me look at what it.
What
says.
I?
Because we're just deciding to do it on Tubi, so we can watch it for free. It is coming. It is coming January 1st on Tubi, but it's coming on January 1st, so we'd have to do it very quickly. So I think we should wait for week 17 next week? Is that what it is?
Yeah,
next week week 17. Let's just save it for the playoffs. I think that's easier.
Okay.
I'd rather not rush it. I'd rather give us a week to do this movie,
or just week 18.
Or we can just do it week 18, and we can give you wild card totally week for well. Your. We can give you wild card week for your big romp, and then like shift.
Because it still lines up for one of us to do a divisional round and then
conference
the round.
Sure, let's do that. I'm good with that. I like that. Yeah.
So that means this week, let's do the one that I was originally going to do for the finale, and this is. The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Good. Brandon's excited for that.
We did a Western earlier in the season, but that was more of a, you know, contemporary, like, neo-Western crime drama. This is just a true classic Clint Eastwood spaghetti Western.
This is 1966, a three-hour-long film, too.
Yeah, a lot of people can also consider this like to be like the Western that like defines Westerns. Like when people think of Westerns, they think of this movie.
And most people our generation haven't seen it, so I feel like it's worth discussing.
To be honest, this is a great movie to pick for this week since we're not recording for a full week. It's a 3-hour long movie, and we have like a week to get it done. So this makes a lot of sense.
It is a little long, but
we have like basically an extra 4 days to get it done. So it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I'd like to do that one. And then close out with Pan's Labyrinth.
Sweet. So then our plan is going to be close out with Pan's Labyrinth for week 18. Brandon, can you take divisional weekend? Do you want to take divisional weekend or wild card? What do you want?
I don't know. Why aren't we saving wild card for Shane's Big Bang?
This is his Big Bang movie. It's the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. So this is his technical conclusion. Then we do Pan's Labyrinth. Do you want, because I've already decided what film we're doing for me. We're doing Booksmart. We're doing Booksmart.
Okay.
Do you want to
rebound after the wild card, after Pan's Labyrinth, which is kind of dark?
Okay, so do you want to take Divisional round then, so you have some extra time?
Yeah, I'll take Divisional. That's fine. By that point, the Eagles might be finished. So
So that week 18, we're doing Pan's Labyrinth.
Mm-hmm.
So then we have, what are we doing conference title week then? Are we just,
be in Hawaii, so,
I'm
going to be doing the pod from the pool.
let's like save conference week for,
we'll figure it out.
Okay. So here's my plan. We'll save conference week for, cause I actually want to give you guys some time. We can talk about this now. I'm actually tempted to talk about this now since we have some time. So let's save it for, so conference week, let's just skip it. Let's skip a week. Let's just focus on the games because we're getting to the Super Bowl. Then it will give you guys 2 weeks to do this. Super Bowl week is going to be, we're going to make our own playlists and we have to listen to it and review it. Every song that you put in has to have a reason for why it's in there. It has to just kind of make sense. Like, why is this song being put in there? And I guess my question is, do you guys want it? Because I feel like I'll do mine on Spotify. You guys can do it on kind of whatever platform you choose as long as we have access to it. How many songs do you guys think is worth putting on that list, giving the idea that we'll have 2 weeks to listen to it? So basically, the deadline to get it done would be like the Monday after divisional week or Tuesday after divisional week, let's say. We'll have 2 weeks to listen to it, basically three, because we record Super Bowl Sunday. We record Super Bowl the Monday after, because it's the Super Bowl. How many songs do you guys want to put on in there? Like, what's the maximum amount of songs you guys want to put in? Do you guys want to put in 15? Do you guys want to put in 20? Do you guys want to put in 10 each? Like, how?
I was thinking maybe like 10 each.
10 each?
Yeah, 10 is fine.
10 is fine.
That's like the standard length of an album these days.
Okay. All right. We'll do 10. Sounds good. So 10 songs. I will make that due the Tuesday after divisional weekend. So divisional Sunday. Then we have Monday, and then you have the Tuesday to finalize it and send it in.
Our massive movie ranking.
Oh shit! Oh crap! Okay, never mind.
We can still do that. We could do the movie ranking for conference title week, and then do Super Bowl week.
Let's do that. I like that. Yeah. No, I like it. So deadline to put in the songs will be Tuesday. I will also, if you guys do it on Spotify, it'd be easier, but I will also release the songs on our social media platform. So I'll release the playlist as well. So people can give their own opinions on it as well. So the Tuesday after divisional week will be the deadline for turning those in. I'll make it Tuesday night for that. And then conference week, we do our movie rankings of every film we did. And then Super Bowl week, we do the film. We do the playlist. We actually give you 3 weeks because Pro Bowl week, and we're obviously doing our own thing for Pro Bowl week. Pro Bowl week, we'll have a fun show on Sunday. We'll have our awards. So I was thinking about doing the movie rankings Pro Bowl week, but yeah, we should save it for conference week. So that'll basically be it. So Pro Bowl week, we'll do our fun Pro Bowl Sunday show, and then sometime in the midweek before NFL honors, we will do our NFL awards show, which we just kind of go through different awards, stuff we made up, official awards and things like that. So that'll be Pro Bowl week. Conference week, do the rankings from the movies, and Super Bowl week, we'll do playlists. So that'll be it. But for us, have a great and happy new year, you guys. Merry Christmas. Thank you guys for coming in on this wonderful holiday. But we'll see you all after New Year's. I think we're going to be recording on either the 2nd or the 3rd. One of those 2 days, for sure, we'll be recording. And then obviously week 18, we'll record right after the games on Sunday, since we'll have the playoff matchups completed. So we'll see you guys at in 2024. Thank you guys for a great 2023.
Yes, thank you all. Happy holidays and happy new year. See you next year. I love saying that.
See you next year. See you in 2024.
That's so corny sometimes, but it's like, no, but seriously though, yeah, thank you guys for a good 2023. We still have 2 good weeks left. We still have, you know, playoffs left. Should be good. We got some fun stuff left. So we'll see you guys literally next year. But, you know, this was a good 2023, good season so far, or a wild season, I should say. And you know, I can't thank everybody enough for listening. That's a big thing. And then, you know, for you too. So, you know, you guys make the show what it is too. So, you know, love it.
Yeah, I said this when we said Merry Christmas, but this is the best crew I've ever worked with. I'm glad to work with you, Shane, and you, Brandon. We hope to expand the crew as we go. Thank you as well to Sports Ethos for allowing us this platform this year. To Dan Brespris, to David Williams, our director of, I guess, NFL affairs. He's been leading us over the last few months. And Dan Brespris, who's the fantasy guy, or the fantasy basketball guy at Sports Ethos, and our main boss. We can't take them enough. We can't also thank our other shows, from the Bengals show to the Falcons show to all the other team cast, the NFL team cast, as well as the NBA, the MLB, hockey, everyone else. Thank you guys also for helping us promote this show over the course of the year. We can't wait to continue on to 2024. So thank you, Shane. Thank you, Brandon. And thank especially to all of you who have been listening over the course of 2023. And we'll see you in the new year, everybody.
Yes, sir.
Take care, everybody.
See you all in the new year.